Could I have the majority floor leader, the vice president, and the minority floor leader come to the dais? So I just need a minority floor leader. Minority, come on up to the dais. Yeah, you are. So,
turn your mic off.
It's off. It was going wrong. It was actually trying to pick you up. All right. We're set up. Please come to order. Roll call.
Roll call for Thursday, February 18th. Anderson.
Here.
Barnard.
Here.
Bebout. Boner.
Here.
Burns. Case. Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Kraft. Dockstader. Driscoll. Emmerich. Esquivel. Geis. Hastert. Hicks. Johnson. Kinski. Landon. Meyer. Pappas. Perkins. Peterson. Ross. Ross. Rosfus. Scott. Von Platern.
Here.
Wasserberger. Burns.
Here.
President Nicholas.
Here.
Wasserberger.
Excused.
29 present, 1 excused.
The prayer is with the, it just says pastor, but we know it's Pastor Billy Minder.
Let's pray. Our Heavenly Father, we thank you for a beautiful morning outside and the chance to do the people's business here inside. And today, Father, I want to pray for these senators. From Cheyenne, Floyd Esquivel and his grandson, Tay. From Warland, Gerald Geis. From Green River, John Astert. From Bags, Larry Hicks. My neighbor, Wayne Johnson. And from Sheridan, Dave Kinski. Lord, I ask that you give them clarity, energy, and endurance as they do the people's business. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Play ball. Just a couple issue, folks. There is a technical amendment being made to the Wasserberger von Platern amendment that's being made to the second reading, so we'll move second reading back. We'll do third reading first. There is a bill that got slipped in corporations, an interim committee bill, the interim committee bill, Senate File 54. That'll be noticed. It'll be up tomorrow morning, but put on the general file where it will rest at the in the hands of the majority floor leader. And we're at that order of business of reading correction of the journal committee report. Will the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of February 17, 2016 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Wasserberger, chairman.
You've heard the report. Are there any objections? There being none, that report has been adopted. The doctor of the day is Dr. Casey Miller. Don't see Dr. Miller. There's no nurse of the day. Today in Wyoming history, 1911. An act providing that each county would have legislative representation was signed into law by Governor Carey. Session status. Today is day 9 of the proposed 20-day session. Today is the last days for bills to be reported out of committee in the first house. Tomorrow, Friday, is the last day for committee on the whole, of the whole in the first house. We have some reports from standing committees. Would they please be read in?
February 17, 2016, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, to whom was referred Senate File 72, 70 miles per hour speed limit state highways, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Coe, Cooper, Rothfuss, and Von Platern, excused Senator Anderson. Senator Cooper, acting chairman.
Are there any other reports? There being none, Senator Von Platern.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate File 72, 70 miles per hour speed limit, does have an appropriation. I ask that it be re-referred to committee number 2, appropriations.
Without objection, Senate File 72 is re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. We're now at that order of business of bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
Mr. President, we do, but before we do that, Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, we have a couple of bills on general file today. If you've noticed the board, what we're going to do is we're going to try to get through all of those, and if we do and we're on track, there may be some others showing up. My intention is to try to get those done by, say, 7 o'clock tonight. We'll see how we're going. It may very well be that we have a meal brought in. We'll see how the day progresses. We still will have general file tomorrow, but it will be after the third reading amendments to the budget bill. So if we look at that and we get bogged down on the budget bill, I'm not going to work as Friday night till 8 or 9 o'clock. That's not going to happen. So whatever we don't get done today on committee of the whole, there's a good chance it might come up tomorrow, but don't rely on that. So it's going to depend on how we do today, just so you know, on what we're going to do with general file. And with that, Mr. President, we do have a consent list, and I move the third reading consent list, which as follows. Senate File 9, Railroad Quiet Zones. Senate File 68, Budget Shortfall Measures. Senate File 75, Criminal Trespass to Collect Data Amendments. Senate File 76, Civil Trespass to Collect Data Amendments. And Senate File 103, At-Will Employment Contracts.
Would any of the members like any of those bills removed from the consent list? No request. Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 9, Railroad Quiet Zones. Senate File 68, Budget Shortfall Measures. Senate File 75, Criminal Trespass to Collect Data Amendments. Senate File 76, Civil Trespass to Collect Data Amendments. Senate File 103, At-Will Employment Contracts. Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Anderson?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Boner?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Escobel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Fladern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Nicholas?
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 aye. Senate File 9. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 9, 30 aye. Senate File 68. Are there any changes? Case aye to no. Rothfuss aye to no. Meyer, aye to no. Escobel, aye to no. Kraft, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 68, 25 aye, 5 no. Senate File 75, are there any changes? Case aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 75, 29 aye, 1 no. Senate File 76, are there any changes? Case aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 76, 29 aye, 1 no. Senate File 103, are there any changes? Closing vote. closing. Vote closed. Senate File 103, 30-I.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, the following bills have passed the Senate. Senate File 9, 68, 75, 76, and 103. All have passed the Senate. Senator Meyer?
Privilege of the floor.
You may.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, in the gallery behind us here, we have some of Wyoming's new young ag leaders. They're this current members of the agricultural leadership class, and I'll introduce them. First, we got, and if you guys just wave your hands so people know who you are, Dustin Bergeroff, and I apologize for slaughtering your names.
From where?
From Burlington, Wyoming. Kelly Crutchett from Buffalo, Wyoming.
Yeah.
Nathan Graves from KC, Wyoming.
Yeah, KC.
Shelley Gray from Douglas, Wyoming.
Yay.
Kate Jackson from Jugwater. Yeah. Hey, yeah,
yay.
Jugwater, yeah, yeah. Sarah Cower Griffin from Laramie, Wyoming, Mr. President.
Hey.
James Cruz from Lusk.
All right.
All right. Brian Lee from Tarrington. Let's go Tarrington. Yeah. Dixie Michael from Powell. All right. Darla Rhodes from Ralston.
Ralston.
And Stephanie Rosenkrantz from Beulah.
Beulah.
Yeah. Jophus Shumway from Afton.
Yeah, all right.
And Forrest Smith from Powell again. Yeah, and Nate Winninger from Powell.
Wow.
Please help me welcome them to the Senate.
Here it is.
Folks, while we're on the privileges of the floor, the staff has said that folks would like to see hard copies of the budget books, the agency books. There's one set maintained in the office behind us where the copying center is. If you ask Katie, Katie will help you find those. And if you don't know, if you're looking for an agency budget book, simply Google and ANI Budget Division, and if you go to the Budget Division, all of the agency books are there, and you can download them if you want to download them or see them online. So they're easy to find online, but there is a hard copy back in the office behind the dais where the big printers are. Third reading of the bills. Senate File 40. How about second reading? Is that amendment out? Is this third reading? Yeah, that's what I thought. Senate File 40, third reading of the bill.
Senate File 40, Abandoned Mine Land Funds, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee. An act relating to abandoned mine land funds.
Okay, do we have an amendment? We have an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 40, third reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 2.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 40. This is a technical correction that was brought to me by staff. We had the wrong date in regards to the Federal Act and would ask your favorable consideration.
You've heard the explanation. Any discussion? There being none, the question is on third reading amendment number 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment's been adopted. And we're back on the bill, Senate File 40. The Chief Clerk would please call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Bebout. Aye. Boner.
Aye.
Aye. Burns. Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Cooper?
Aye.
Aye. Kraft?
No.
No. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Escobel?
No.
No. Geis?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
No.
No. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Johnson?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
No.
Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Nicholas?
Aye.
Aye. Case, closing vote.
Barnard,
aye to no. Closing. Vote closed. 23 aye, 7 no.
Senate File 40, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 40 has passed the Senate. That takes us back to second reading amendments, right? Is that amendment out, the corrected one? Not yet. Should we stand at ease? Let's see. Business of bills on second reading. Put that order of business. business of bills on second reading. Senate File 41, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 41, state-funded capital construction.
We have an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 41, second reading amendment number 1, corrected copy.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have second reading amendment number 6. Is that correct?
Let me see what you've got. Pardon me? No, I just doesn't say corrected. The reading clerk's just got something different than we do. Could I see yours? Thank you. We just know it's corrected. Set of file 41, 2006. So you said corrected. Was there a 6 before? Oh, they haven't been voted on? Oh, gotcha. Well, we could have been going then. I get it now. You're ahead of us. So, do I take these off?
Correction. Senate File 41, second reading amendment number 1. Not a corrected copy.
Okay, now we're good. Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, and I would like to move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 41. Members of the body, what this does is go into Senate File 41. It moves $15.8 million. Comes out of the AML funds. That money currently in 41 goes towards the engineering building at the University of Wyoming. What this does is move those AML funds over into an account with the Water Development Office for the remediation of mine land account associated with water quality impacts from abandoned mines associated with the construction of dams and reservoirs. But what it also does is it goes back into 41 and it moves $15.8 million back into the University of Wyoming for the engineering building construction out of the facilities construction account. So it backfills that money for the engineering building at the University of Wyoming. Let me explain the rationale for this. There's been a lot of discussion, and we've had our congressional delegation here talking about the importance of the abandoned mine land program. If you go through your list on the top of your desk and you burrow down far enough, someplace in here, and there's been a lot of discussion about what the intent of SMACRA is, and that's the Surface Mining Control and Reclamation Act. You've got a copy of that law on your desk. But while you're digging, I'm just going to go through and read you the three priorities laid out under SMACRA. Number 1 is to regulate the surface coal mining operation. Number 2 is the acquisition and reclamation of abandoned mines. And then it says for other purposes. If you go further into the guidelines and some of the literature on the Office of Surface Mines and Reclamation's website, they talk about who we are and what we do. You've got another handout that probably says Senate File 40 that goes into the SMACRA. And again, it says one of the primary purposes is the partners are also responsible for claiming and restoring lands and water degraded by mining operations before 1977. Well, and we've had a lot of discussions about how important it is that we here in the state of Wyoming use these abandoned mine land funds appropriately. Not to say that the current the way that's structured couldn't fall underneath the other purposes, but when you look at the hierarchical priority for AML monies, abandoned coal mines, other abandoned mines prior to 1977, and then other projects. And I'll tell you, I had quite a conversation with members of our congressional delegation, and they said one of the things we absolutely need if we're going to continue to get the AML funds to Wyoming.
Folks, the conversations for folks off the table are not eligible to be written or discussed on here. The only information before it are communications made by members on the floor.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, members, we've had this discussion amongst ourselves as how important it is to make sure that we in Wyoming appropriately use these funds to ensure that those funds continually to flow to the state of Wyoming. This absolutely complies with the intent of the law. This is information when we actually are going to do abandoned mine land reclamation with some of these monies. So let me tell you why I think this is important. I'm going to read through a list. And what this is effectively does is allow the state of Wyoming to go in and actually construct dams and reservoirs that are impacted or potentially prohibited for construction due to abandoned mine land waste, effluent and discharge from abandoned mines within the state of Wyoming. But I want to read through a list, and I want you to think back. And I want to think about each one of your own districts and your own towns and communities. Alcova Dam, Anchor Dam, Big Sandry Dam, Boyson Dam, Buffalo Bill Dam, Bull Lake Dam, Flaming Gorge, Fontanelle, Glendale, Granite Springs, Grassy Lake, Guernsey, Jackson Lake, Keyhole, Quartz, Meeks, Pathfinder, Pilot Butte, Seminole, Rob Roy, Crow Creek, Upper Lower Sunshine, High Savory, Ty Hack, Sulphur Creek, Beaver Knotton, Lake De Smet, Gray Roof, Levitt Reservoir, Grable Valley, Austin Wall, Deaver, New Fork Lake, and Middle Piney. This isn't the entire list of dams in the state of Wyoming. I would contend to you that our entire economy in the state of Wyoming revolves and is contingent upon our ability to put dams behind water. There's not a community in the state of Wyoming that doesn't either benefit directly from municipal water, heavy and light industrial water, agricultural water, and recreation-based associated with the construction of dams in the state of Wyoming. I would further contend to you that if you want to add value to coal in the state of Wyoming and add value to other resources, you need water. How do you add value to coal is you run it through a coal-fired power plant and you generate electricity. The largest electrical generating plants in the state of Wyoming, the majority of them run off of water that's stored behind dams. They have to have a firm 100% supply, and the only way you can guarantee that is with a dam. Well, members of the body, I always remember when we come to these issues and we talk about water, one of the axioms that I think is appropriate to the state of Wyoming that was quoted by Mark Wayne is whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting, folks. So here we are. But let's talk about what they also do as far as economy. Construction of jams provides construction, and it provides construction jobs in another sector of the construction economy. It provides recreation, agricultural, industrial, municipal jobs.
Time.
Jobs for construction and manufacture. When you build a dam, you use concrete. So, members of the body, what I would ask you to do is consider this. I'll stand for any questions. I think it's very important that we use these AML mines for what they were designated for, and I think we should build the infrastructure of Wyoming, and we should build our economy. That's what this amendment does. Thank you, Mr. President. I stand for any questions.
Thank you. Further discussion. Senator Bebout.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. President. Some questions of the sponsor. You know, I was trying to track how you were talking about the $15.8 million. You take it away from the engineering college, but then you do a loop run around another direction and find the money in an account. I didn't track very well on that, so I need some explanation. And then if you're talking about the 15.8, are you talking about the prior balance or you're talking about the mitigating account? That needs to be very clearly identified. You know, one of the other things I worry about, and you had a list of dams there that we've done, I don't believe any of those dams had to have money spent on mitigating the impact of the water flowing into them. They were all constructed for other reasons and did other things, so I wonder about that. Another question is, why did you not go to the Wyoming Water Development Commission? It seems to me that We have $100 million in there for dams. If you're going to do a dam over there in that neck of our of the state, that you ought to be able to include in that the money to mitigate the impact of the particular situation of this on that abandoned mine layer, abandoned mine that we have over in Carbon County. There's these are serious questions, Mr. President. We need to have the answer. We've got to be sure and understand what this does. And under the AML, I'm not sure that I heard or I've read that language under SMACRA that it says that money shall be used as necessary for the construction of dams or reservoirs.
Further discussion. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, parliamentary inquiry. Mr. President, is it your understanding of the Senate rules that this, because it moves money around, is going to require a roll call?
Yes.
Thank you.
Further discussion. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Listen to this, following on with just a couple of the questions. I mean, as we went down through, not all the dams, but certainly a significant number of the dams, as you went down certainly through the Platte River Basin, and as you went down through the Bighorn River Basin, and I'm sure a number of others, but most of those dams are on the Bureau of Reclamation and federally owned. And so while there is some control a Buffalo Bill, I mean, you look at those, and each one of those have various maintenance accounts and other amounts like that. Last I knew, I think, remember, there's 20-plus million or so in the Buffalo Bill dam account, or is it the dam bill, Buffalo Bill account? Well, anyway, whichever way that is, and so that there are maintenance. So anyway, and first of all, those are also controlled, maintained, and constructed through the federal government, the Bureau of Reclamation. Again, I'd remind the body that when we do this, we have a Water Development Commission, we have a Select Water Committee. Last I heard some testimony that came before General Appropriations as we talked to the Water Development Commission was that they have plans for five fairly near construction projects that they think they're ready to move on out of Water 3 as that comes up. And somebody who's on Select Water, if they want to correct me, they can on that. In addition, there's another five dams that are right behind those that are in various stages of planning and construction. So I'm puzzled and trying to understand how this all fits together because we've got these things set up. We have funding streams that go into water development 1, 2, and 3. We've got a planning and organization that looks at it. We've got a select committee that oversees that. And so this is all awfully new to me on that. Thank you.
Senator Meyer?
Chairman, I guess in brief answer to that this dam was in the queue, still might be. Senator Geis might have the list on that. But the remediation on this part is something we can't use water development funds for. It's just not in that purview, and it's a huge, it's a lot of money. You do remediation when our primary goal is water development. And so this is something that's in DEQ's purview, and AML funds is something that you're supposed to use for remediation. So basically, I think just speaking for myself from Select Water, I'd rather use remediation funds for remediation projects and water funds for water projects.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President, for my first time. And it's not clear to me. I mean, you take money out from the engineering building, then you say you put it back from state facilities construction account. There's only a limited amount of funds necessarily in there. So something has to go. Did you make a pick? Did you decide that something else is on the chopping block? I think we ought to at least know what that is before I could vote for this.
Further discussion before the sponsor takes his second and final time. Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. A question for the Select Water Committee on this, and I understand that the prohibitive nature of the funds being utilized strictly for the remediation. Is that a statutory requirement? Is that just the way we've done business? And then the other question I would ask, if we're going to spend this amount of money to clean up this issue, but there's no dam that's built. What have we accomplished?
Senator Cooper.
Thank you. Mr. President, as I recall, good senator's question there, I serve on the Water Development, or Select Water Committee, rather, is that the remediation funds, if I understand the question, have always come out of the DEQ for any kind of remediation. And, of course, the water funds are strictly for water projects. So there is a delineation there. I don't know that the Water Development Commission, Mr. President, has really any rules for being able to handle remediation and cleanup of that sort. We've never had that. And so my feeling is, as I recall, that that's strictly a DEQ requirement.
Any further discussion?
Mr. President, over to your left.
Oh, thank you, Senator Burns.
Mr. President, as the chairman of JC and the majority floor leader have referred to, they did it more artfully and more subtly than me. You're taking $15 million from engineering, then you're somehow putting that money back. The bottom line, somebody's going to lose $15 million here. So very clearly, I'd like to know, who is it that is going to end up $15 million short as a result of this amendment?
Further questions, discussion before the sponsor takes his final. Senator Meyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, a lot of these capital construction funds are basically in the projects are phased. And so, you know, some of these things aren't going to be paid for several years. They're not going to be, you know, all of these different projects can probably be teed up. And there's going to be, I think, in every one of these instances, the funds that we have appropriated for us now, we're probably going to have to augment those, whether it's change orders or changes in the designs or whatever as they go through the process. So $15 million in the entire scope of things in capital construction, the amount of projects that are queued up is a relatively small amount that we'll probably have to come up with. And we'll probably have to come up with at least that in other circumstances. So I don't think it's going to prohibit anyone getting stopped because we're not going to build all these things tomorrow because they're all not shovel ready.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Looking at this further, I think I understand now where it comes from. What it is ultimately would take, and if I'm wrong, the proponent would have to correct me, but as I understand it, I think the crux of it is on line 14 of the amendment where it strikes that and puts in state facilities construction account. My understanding is the only state facilities construction account, otherwise lifting the bill, would be the state ANI Casper project, which is for the hospital in Casper. So that's what I think is happening. Looks to me like what's happening is you're shelving the thing, and so what you're doing is you're going to take $15 million, you'll take it out of the money that was headed to the engineering department, and then you'll take the money from the Casper building and put it into that's where you backfill to the engineering building. I think that's what this does.
Any further discussion before the sponsor takes his last time? Back to the sponsor for the final discussion. We have a project stranded between bureaucracies.
Mr. President, members of the body, I think some of the questions that have been raised have already been answered by other members. I think Senator from Goshen County and the Senator from Natrona County have addressed the issue of where that funds may come from. But let me talk about the issue of SMACRA, whether it doesn't authorize construction of a dam. This money wouldn't be used for the construction of a dam. And I'm going to try to walk you through the federal permitting processes so you understand why this money would be shifted to water development and address the concerns of the good majority floor leader is what happened if we clean this up and the dam never gets built. That's exactly part of my concern. So you have two dual processes that are going to go on. One's the AML and the mine remediation. The other one's the Clean Water Act, which you have to go through Section 404 to get a permit.
And then you have to complete a NEPA analysis, which is going to require an environmental impact statement. That stuff will all fall under the construction of a dam and reservoir. That dam and reservoir is contingent upon the ability to remediate the mine waste. Now, the real problem is here is if you don't have a conjunction project moving forward at the same time, we run the real risk of going in there and spending a significant amount of AML funds. And we've got the preliminary engineering and the consultant's estimate of what that's going to cost. It's a little over $13 million. You factor in a 10% contingency rate and inflation for the next 3 years, and you get right up there to a little over $15 million, folks. Balances out pretty well. But if we move forward with AML and we clean that mine up, and it's not attached to the purpose and need for the construction of that dam, then you can't use those AML monies. And what effectively we'll do at the state of Wyoming, we're going to spend $15 million cleaning up a mine, and then you're going to turn around and you're going to bear the cost of the construction of the reservoir. None of this money would go towards the construction of the reservoir. This is to deal with the mine reclamation. But what that effectively does is to allow us to use that money as part of the purpose and need for the reservoir is to clean up the watershed, improve the aquatic environment, take the pollutant out of the system, restore native species. There's a potential candidate threatening an endangered species that will be addressed, so it takes care of that issue. So if these processes do not move concurrently, you'll end up with a situation where we very well could remediate the pollution with AML monies, turn around, and if we decide to construct a dam, we're going to be required to mitigate the impacts of that. This is the mitigation. This would effectively allow us to do, as part of the purpose and need of the reservoirs, to clean up an abandoned mine land. That's an appropriate use. So we're leveraging one program against another. The purpose and need for the reservoir will be tied to the abandoned mine land. That's why you have to have that money in one entity's hand with one project. They need to be conjunctive. It will save the state of money, a lot of money and mitigation cost if that's part of the purpose and need in the reservoir. So, Mr. Chairman, let me see if there was any other points that I may have missed that were brought up. I think that addresses most of them. There were some questions as to where would this potential project. It's keyed up in the top five right now. At one time it was number one because of this abandoned mine land issue and the fact that historically, water development has never used water development to do AML work. It's kind of under a gridlock. We've spent the last 2 years collecting a significant amount of data and come up with the remediation, some costs. That money's not just something, a figure I pulled out of my head. That's based on consultants' estimate to be able to clean this project up. So with that, members of the body, I would ask for your favorable consideration of a yes vote on the amendment number one to Senate File 41. Thank you.
The question is on second reading amendment number one, if the chief clerk would please call the roll.
Anderson?
No.
No. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Bebout?
No.
No. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
No.
No. Case?
No.
No. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
No.
No. Cooper?
No.
No. Kraft?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
No.
No. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
No.
Escobel?
No.
No. Geis?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
No.
No. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Johnson?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
No.
No. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
No.
No. Von Fladern?
No.
No. Wasserberger?
No.
No. President Nicholas?
No.
No. Closing vote? Driscoll? Aye to no. Christensen? Aye to no. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 10 aye, 20 no.
Second reading amendment number one has failed. We're on second reading amendment number two. Senator Scott, would you please have it read in?
Senate File 41, second reading amendment number two, page 11, after line 11.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, this is a much simpler concept than some of the ones we've been talking about. If you recall the discussion committee of the whole, I'm concerned in this. This is the health facilities, and I'm concerned that the facilities task force has given us a plan that is going to require more money than we have on hand to complete. Not surprising given what's going on. But they've got enough money to complete substantial facilities, Mr. President. My understanding is about $75 million available in the accounts, been appropriated to those accounts, and the total plan, there's a segment that's going to cost about $120 million. And what this amendment does is says that before we start spending Level 3 planning design money, which is significant money, we're going to take a look and make sure that as we go building at a time, the way you have to, there's going to be enough money to complete the projects that we're taking to Level 3, and that it would make sense. Because I think there's a very real risk, Mr. President, given our financial situation, that we will be able to come up with the full $120 million or whatever it actually really costs in the immediate future. I think there may well be a delay, and I want to make sure we get a system that will work and we don't have some building sitting idle because it depends on the completion of another building we couldn't afford to build. So when we asked about that in Committee 10 when we reviewed this plan, frankly, I didn't get a satisfactory answer. I don't think they had thought about the possibility that the money to do the whole thing might not be there, at least not be there for an extended period. I suspect, Mr. President, eventually we'll do it, but eventually might be 10 years from now. And so I'm hoping that we will construct the facilities that can do the most to alleviate the immediate problems. And I wanted to review to make sure that would happen. So I'm asking for the review to be by the five elected officials, the State Loan Investment Board. They're an independent outfit. They're smart. They're elected by the people. And they can convene and do this sort of thing rapidly so that the needed projects aren't delayed. So that's what this does. It has a review to make sure that the sequencing makes sense and that what's done makes sense given the amount of money we know we have and given the risk that completing the whole thing may be interrupted. And it has this review by the slip board in here. Mr. President, the best way I could figure out to get a hard look on this issue rapidly by people that have the interests of the whole state at heart and will be sympathetic to getting something reasonable accomplished. So with that, Mr. President, I urge adoption of the amendment.
Senator Vibout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on and against the amendment, but there's some technical reason which is part of it. But let's talk a little bit about what we're trying to accomplish with the going to Level 3 planning. You know, we spent a lot of time during the interim, your task force on this particular issue dealing with the problems we have. And my tall colleague from Natrona County is very aware of the situation we have with the Title 25 issues and how we deal with them, where they go. And clearly we need to have a change in direction, members of the Senate, on how we deal with that. We need to look at the state hospital and change the mission of that state hospital. Then it rolls over into the WLRC. And as we spent all the time this summer looking at that, it became very apparent that we needed to do this in two steps. And we looked at total cost of around $150 million. We understand the urgency of this. That's why we've been setting aside money to do this and step it up. I have no problem with the SLIB board looking at it, but when you read this amendment, specifically if you look at line 9, it says plan shall address one building and related facilities at a time. Well, one building just kills the deal because each project has more than one building we deal with. So is the intention of the sponsor of this amendment to say that if you do one building, that could be you have demolition of buildings going on, you have some refurbishment of buildings going on, you do have new buildings as well. So if he's talking about we shall only do one area at a time, like only the state hospital first, and then the WLRC, well, that's a different scenario. But either way, Mr. President, this is a very important project. There's all kinds of reasons to drive this and move it forward. Maybe if he would come back in a third reading amendment and clarify what his intentions are, it might be a read a lot better. And I, at this point, though, Mr. President, I would ask you to defeat the amendment.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Mr. Chairman, on and against the amendment, again, for a technical reason. I think that, first of all, when you go to the first part, the first paragraph, ultimately, what this has gone through, Mr. President, we've gone through level two, where it's ready to go to level three. The anticipation is that level three would take place over the interim, and that this body would be back here voting to authorize to proceed with this in the next session, in the next budget session. So there's the anticipation is there will be no authorization to move forward with construction until we come back, and this legislature will then authorize that to move forward. Again, as we look at that, as your task force went out and looked, one of the things that happened is one of the issues we have is at the state hospital is that we've got a certain population there referred to as geriatric psychological. Excuse me, geriatric psychiatric folks. They call them geropsych, but that's the and I don't mean to be. But that's kind of the vernacular that gets used. But that population is there in the state hospital for too long a period of time. And so and those are long-term individuals. Those are typically folks that you cannot place out in private care nursing facilities or other nursing facilities because of the psychiatric part of their issue and because it makes them very hard to take care of. So ultimately, but there needs to be a place that takes care of them well and takes care of them in a dignified manner. And so one of the purposes of this is that part of the facility at WLRC would be modified and some construction there at the same time so that we can move that portion of population into the WLRC, which will now have a dual purpose. It will have the purpose for which it's been there and which it currently is. That will be built and improved for that. Portion, but the other side will be to take care of this longer-term portion and thereby free up space. So there is an interentwined process. My understanding is, as we go through the budget, and maybe the chairman of appropriations can confirm this, but with the if this bill goes through and if this goes through, that we are pretty much have the amount that we're awfully close to having the amount necessary to do the first two phases of this project, which is the state hospital and the WLRC. It's not all the way there, but it's awfully close. We don't know exactly what it's going to cost, but I can tell you that as this committee went on, we've been looking at costs very carefully. We've been trying to learn from some of the issues that have arisen under the Capitol Square project. We've gone back. We've held our architect's feet to the fire. We've insisted on competitive bidding in each instance. In one case with consultants, we rejected all bids and went back out to bids. And came back and reduced some of the initial cost and found more responsive bidders for much less than what was there. We're trying to make sure that this gets done on time, on budget, so that ultimately when we start a project in this legislature, the anticipation is when we come back next year and ask for authorization, this will be paid for and ready to go. But this legislature will authorize that move. So there will not be that won't happen until this legislature authorizes that. With respect to this, with amendment, a lot of parts of this are exactly what the process will be in any event. The state building commission will be in charge of this, will approve it as it goes along. They're the folks that do this. So the state building commission is made up of the five electeds. So we can say the state loan investment board, we can say the state building commission, but in either case, the same individuals sit on the same board. Again, I think I've explained what the technical issue and why I oppose this amendment is simply under plan. The main part is the State Loan Investment Board is not quite the right body. The next one under Cap A is the good majority of Florida referred to the one building issue. But B and C, I think,
that those are exactly the point and exactly what the task force and certainly the Committee on Health is trying to do. So there certainly is no disagreement with those. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion before the sponsor takes his last? Senator Dockstader.
Thank you. I'll just be brief. It's already been said that I just want to emphasize that point. The check and balance is there. We come back. This just keeps the template moving forward. Ask for your opposition for the amendment.
Senator Barnard.
Mr. President, in regards to the new building at the WLRC, I was wondering if I could find out how many new state employees this was going to take to fill that building.
Further questions? The question wasn't really germane, but I think the Senator Scott, do you know the answer to that, or would you like to have one of the members? Let's go to Senator Perkins first.
Thank you.
Answer. It was. Let's answer it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and answer that question. My recollection is from our discussions and our tours and discussions that they're essentially, I don't think that we're looking at it having really any new employees. In fact, in some cases, it may be more efficient. We may be able to do some of the same work with maybe even fewer employees, but I don't think that there's a net increase. And if I'm wrong, I'd ask one of my other fellow task members to tell us, but I don't think that there's a net increase in the number of employees.
Thank you. Back to the sponsor for the final discussion on this amendment, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, my concern was that there wasn't enough money to do the related things, and we were going to wind up with a half-built project. And a bunch of these Level 3 plans are expensive, and you don't want to do them until you know you've got enough or close to enough, depending on how they come out, to actually do the project, and particularly with our financial circumstances. I think the point on the one building is well taken. I would express one other concern in this whole area, Mr. President, and that is the state hospital has had a mighty push to not have anybody there long term. And frankly, I think that is a mistake, that there are some people whose mental illness is sufficiently severe. We've got to have some kind of a long-term solution to them because they have to be institutionalized, and I have not heard that. But, Mr. President, I do think the one building concern, we could word better. I do want to make sure that it is reviewed with the look to make sure that there's enough, we proceed to level three designs, there's enough so that we get a sensible package done if we have to interrupt. So at this point, Mr. President, I think we've had a good discussion. I'll withdraw the amendment now and try to work with some of the people involved to get one that does work.
Second reading number two has been withdrawn. We're now on to second reading amendment number three. If the reading clerk would please read it in.
Senate File 41, Second Reading Amendment Number 3, page 23, lines 3 and 4.
Senator Ebaugh.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move Second Reading Amendment Number 3 to Senate File 41. Members of the Senate, this deals with a capital complex that we're working on. And Mr. President, this got off to a real shaky start, the entire capital complex. I will tell you that your oversight committee has worked diligently. We have a subcommittee that's been meeting monthly and almost actually biweekly, and this thing is really on track and going in the right direction. And, of course, it includes not only there's five components of that capital project. There's the capital, there's the connector, there's the HVAC, there's the Herschler. The last one escapes me what it is. But, Mr. President, what I have committed to, and I've said this openly for a long time, as I'm committed to the $300 million for that project. That is the amount of money that I'm willing to spend, and if we have situations that occur that go over that $300 million, then we value engineering getting it down to a lower amount. And what this does, Mr. President, to speaking to the amendment, that if you look at the bill we've added, we've taken $990,000 away from the from the Department of Corrections. It was set up to do certain things for the North facility demolition, and we've taken that money and we've transferred it to the capital project to do, and I'll read it to you. It reappropriated the Department of State Parks and Capital Resources for design and infrastructure installation for interpretive exhibits in the state capital complex. Mr. President, this is over and above the $300 million. This is something we could always do later. I just don't think we spend more money than $300 million on the complex regardless, and that's why I would ask you to support this amendment.
Senator Bebout, or excuse me, you already spoke. We'll get your final one out of the way. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment, much of what the good majority floor leader said is true. Your oversight group and the leadership and those that have been on the task force have been working very, very hard to keep the project within budget. But you have to understand something here, folks. That will be in budget. But one of the things that did not and was never in the budget was the concept of a student learning center, interpretive center, exhibit space for tours, not only for the people at large, but for classes, for the students as they come through the Capitol. And so we have taken a hard look at it. It really kind of started, you know, had we done things differently, perhaps we would have. The very first thing that we would have done when we started this project was to go look at all the capitals that have been renovated recently. But for Senator Nicholas getting out on his own and doing that, we wouldn't have actually brought this concept into play. But each and every capital, whether it's Minnesota, Idaho, Utah, I'm trying to think, there's a couple of Kansas, they all incorporated this learning center into their redesign of their capital. It's important not only for our youth to not only to understand the significance of the Capitol and the building in and of itself and the history of the state of Wyoming, but also to learn and to become more involved in their government. As a result of those other states and what they have seen by doing that, they've seen an increased visitation many, many times over in terms of the people coming to the Capitol. Has been a great forum for tourism, and of course here in Cheyenne, it is the number one attraction other than the State Museum, and Cheyenne Frontier Days falls in there for about a week. But that's a very important thing. So where this money during JAC, it was not my motion. It came up during JAC's hearings that there is this money that's been sitting in an account for the North Prison and for demolition. It's been there for over a decade, just sitting there. So if you go to page 22, you see that we took a portion of that money to be used for the women, for flooring at the Honor Conservation Camp and the Women's Center and the Wyoming Medium Correctional Institution, because they needed money. And that money wasn't being used in this account. And then a motion was made to bring in $990,000 for infrastructure installation. Folks, we are moving forward. All this does is allow them, when they're doing the construction at the Hirschler Building, to build in the conduit and the corridors for the infrastructure, so that we can do this at some point in time, because the cost of that educational center is more than $990,000. We're not suggesting that we're going to build it all out now, but if you don't do it now, then what you have to do is you have to come back and rip out walls and do all this other stuff if you ever want to do that. It is imprudent. It was not in the budget. I recognize what the majority floor leader is saying. He's not going to vote for more than $300 million. That's fine. I recognize that. He's been very clear about that. This is outside the budget. It was never in the budget. I'm urging you to stay with the JAC position.
Senator Scott, I think you were not. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, the subsequent debate has explained why I wanted to ask.
Thank you. Senator Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. President. A couple questions. One, and I knew a couple years ago, what are we going to do with the North facility? This is an abandoned facility. It's been sitting there going down, and now we're taking the money away from it. Are we just going to another historical prison, another whatever? I guess to me, these are tough deals, and they need taken care of. You know, we're going to burden somebody sitting down there in that part of the state with another abandoned building, and I think that's irresponsible on our part to take money and do that. That's, we're back to shuffling. If we're going to take money from it, let's use it for what it is. Second, how many other areas are we going off budget on this capital? Is there some other areas that we don't know about that are there? Because for me, I'm okay up to the 300. We were promised, but it dang well better stay there, because from my end of it, I'm hardcore about where that falls. I guess with me, the main deal is, what are we going to do with the prison? We've got problems all around with that prison there, and maybe we need that $900,000 to build a new prison with, or to fix one next door that's sinking.
Senator Ross.
For my second time, Mr. President, the pot of money was a nominal amount. I mean, virtually we've depleted that money. It was appropriated in 2004. It's been sitting there with no use. Now, I can't tell you what the plans are necessary for the demolition of that North prison, but I can assure you that money is not sufficient to do that. There's a lot of problems with it. There's all kinds of questions concerning asbestos and everything else, and they haven't even gotten to it. So it's just been kind of sitting there. There was other needs, and I can assure you this, that everything within the renovation of the Capitol, the connector, and the Hirschler is within the $300 million. No doubt about that. This was a thought that came along. It was never programmed. It was never built in to the budget. So we look for money elsewhere. Is that a cost overrun? It is not a cost overrun. The question is, do you want to add something that really enhances the whole experience, not only for your children, but for people that just want to come see the Capitol, or for tourists? Think about what that's generated there. Now, the thing that that is really important about this is, this is one where there was a handout that was sent out stating that somehow we were hiding money, that we were doing this in the dark of night, and that JAC's hiding what they're doing. That is just pure baloney. It was done in the... in the broad daylight. It wasn't you, I know. We know what happened. But the reality of it is that you can decide not to do it, and you can keep within the $300 million, but there is nothing else outside of this budget except for this. And I think it is extremely prudent to do it now, so at least have that infrastructure in there, so that when we do have the money to do that, you don't have to rip things out and cost three or four or five times more.
Mr. Vice President, would you come forward back to Senator Hicks?
Mr. President, members, and I appreciate the explanation from the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, but when I read the specific language in here, it strikes me of deja vu all over again. So let's leave what it really says here. It says if you go into a reappropriation to the Department of State Parks and Cultural Resources for the design and infrastructure installation for interpretive exhibits, Anybody tell me how much the actual cost of the infrastructure installations are going to be? Do we know exactly what those infrastructure installations are going to look like? This is almost going down the same rabbit hole and looks very similar to what we did with the capital construction, and I'm on board with the $300 million. But my concern is we don't have any designs yet. We could burn through the whole $990,000 on designs. So unless I get some explanation as to how this is going to be partitioned, that X number is going towards design, which leaves X number that's going to be actual for the capital construction of installation of interpretive sites, and that we have some estimated costs and some budgets and some projections on that, this looks like one of those things that probably a year from now or 2 years from now, we're going to say, well, we burned through half of it for the design, but the actual installation is going to be $2.3 million or five. I don't know where we're headed with this. I don't know where this road's going. We don't have enough information today to know if whether $990,000 is a sufficient amount in the budget to design it and install it. Now, what are we installing? Interpretive exhibits. How many? What are they? What do they look like? What's it going to cost? I've got a lot of questions with this one. I'd ask to support the amendment.
Thank you.
Oh, all right. We've sorted that out. Okay. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, the one of the things that we've learned by going out and actually visiting capitals is that if we learned one lesson, and maybe we learned two big lessons. One lesson is that before we start planning, legislators have to get up and go look at facilities. It's hard, it's expensive, it takes time off. And I think that had we designated a group of people and gone and looked at three or four recently remodeled capitals, and this would be true for prisons as well, by the way, we would have learned so much, and we would have spun fewer of our wheels getting there. But the second thing we'll find is that when we select architects and engineers, go look at the facilities first that they've designed, they participated, and make sure you pick somebody who completed a design that is your vision. But one of the first tours that I took was of Kansas, and the most extraordinary thing that happened is that you walk in the front door, there they have a state architect, and the first thing you walk in, and there's a classroom there. And the architect says, you know, when we did all of our work, we learned that the biggest user of these buildings is fourth grade students coming down to do their history classes there. And what was happening is teachers would bring their students there. The students are immediately dispersed through the building. They didn't know what to do with their coats. They were cold. They couldn't go to the bathroom. And it was just a melee. So we created the room where the teachers can first, there's a place for the bus to drop off. Children walk through the front door. They go straight to the classroom. They take their coats off. You settle them down. They use the restroom. And then you can give them an explanation and a tour, and then they march through. They said that they had almost quadrupled the number of fourth grade students coming down to look at the Capitol. And it was a number of those things that made great significance and great change to involving the public in the facilities. Each one of these areas is not designed for legislators. It's not designed for you. It's designed for school children, the public, for others to have access to government. And in this instance, when I spoke to teachers who, in fact, have had that experience, they drop the kids off in front of the Capitol. They're come in. They're cold. There's no place to put their coats down. They're trying to figure out bathrooms. They've got kids running around, and you've seen this. And you also see a dropping off of students coming down. I mean, I watched the number of students that are coming down because, in part, there's no coordinated activity. So in this case, what we're going to do is design essentially a classroom for every school in the state to use fourth grade students or others can come down. There is an organized method to go through the door, go down to the classroom. The classroom will be set up sort of like this area of the diocese. You can do different kind of exercises in it. The restrooms are there. And then you'll have an organized process through the tour through the facility. Now, the other thing that's common with many of these capitals is they're large. They're large, and they're large enough to have capital stores there for selling memorabilia, for having exhibits. Our capital is small. You know, if we had the resources and we could do this, wouldn't it be great to move the State Museum in the Barrett Building over to the Capitol? What a phenomenal experience where you would go and you'd have your State Museum with your Capitol. We simply couldn't afford it. But I tell you what, it turned out we have experts. We went out and looked at our tourism people, and they have done enormous work in setting up exhibits not only at the Southeast Wyoming Tourist, on the Northeast Tourism Center, and they have expertise. And so we reached out to our own experts and said, look, if you want to take the Capitol, which should be the largest tourist center in the state, in at least the southeast part of the state, how would you make it more interactive? And they said, well, these are the things you would do. And they're the things that you see out of the southeast or the visitor center coming in, or any of the visitor centers, kiosk, the opportunity to have interactive boards, the opportunity for a number of things. And if we want to go that route, they may be expensive, but we don't have the resources to do it now. But what we do have the resources to do is create the infrastructure in the building so at later time we can bring in these additional experiences to improve the public interaction and really turn this into an exhibit that this entire experience to attract more people, more tourism. And I would just echo all of the arguments about tourism. Why wouldn't we spend the resources to make sure we get it right in the infrastructure, in the wall? Urge your support. Thank you.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, on and for the amendment, I was really surprised that we've been studying this for 15 years and we didn't visit other states and their capitals before we got to the guaranteed maximum amount. I visited a few states and found that they certainly did it way different. The other thing is the schools using that facility, there may be fewer schools using that facility if we're cutting their budget, but the schools mostly would be in the southeast, I think, that would be visiting the tourist kind of attraction we're making. I think this kind of changes what we're trying to do. We're trying to renovate the Capitol, not necessarily make a tourist attraction. So on and for the amendment.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. President, for my second time, we've got a display here. We've got a lot of children. We've got an aquarium for them here.
No, we're in the aquarium. They're watching.
Oh, we're in the aquarium. Okay.
Yeah, they're watching the aquarium.
On and for the amendment, I agree with everything that's been said, and I agree wholeheartedly. I love tourism. I love the other end of it. I also appreciate the thought of it, but we're on a $300 million budget, and what we're asking for out of this is one-third of 1%. We're talking about value engineering. We're talking about going. If we're there, we can put it in, and if we get near the end and we're down to $1 million and it matters to everybody, maybe we can talk about it, but we're way ahead of the game here. When we're talking one-third of 1%, we don't have anything built, and we don't have any solid bids on anything. I think we're years ahead of this. We're 1 or 2 years out. We can easily, once it's added, we can decide to carpet one less room in the Hirschler building maybe. But there's other ways to go about it. Let's keep this thing inside the budget.
Any further discussion before the sponsor takes his final? No further discussion. Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, for my second time, and I'll be brief, you brought up a question I would hope that we could answer. So it talks about in the current legislation, it says design infrastructure. And then we're talking about constructing a new room for these students to come into. Now, does that room already exist in the current plans? And if it does, what was the intended purpose for that room? Because if the intended purpose for that room all along was to have an interpretive center, then I think it negates the purpose to put these monies in there because the design was already in there. So I'm still confused on how this $990,000, is it for design? Are we going to have to do a change order on the current floor plan within the building? Or is the $990,000 strictly for infrastructure? And what's that infrastructure going to cost?
So, folks, what we'll do is let's try to finish up everybody. Then we'll do Senator Ross and then Senator Bebout for closing. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, on and for the amendment. Mr. President, I will tell the Senate, I have voted against this capital project at every opportunity I have had. I have great concerns with it. I think we let it get totally out of hand. I think it's too grandiose. I think it's going to degrade the efficiency of the legislature long term, and that disturbs me. I think it's going to cost too much at a time we can't afford it. And, Mr. President, I think this is just one more step down that path.
Senator Burns.
Against the amendment. first of all, for the north unit over in Rollins, I've been through it quite a few times, both before and after it closed. That place is fine. It's just sitting there, and even once we do, if we ever do spend the money to demolish it, it's not going to look any worse than it does now. It's I've actually been against the idea of demolishing it because I think there are potential uses for it. As to the capital itself, keep in mind that we are making these decisions now, and we're looking at the money now and over the next couple of years. But we're talking about making decisions for the next 50 to 60 years. We've got a sitting room full of kids right now. They're going to be here tomorrow. They're going to be here next week and the week after. And they're going to be here every session we have. And when they out there are our age, there's going to be kids coming to the Capitol to look. So when you're making these decisions and you're fretting about the cost of this, the thing to do is take this out and amortize it out over 50 years. And how much money are we actually spending on this?
Any further discussion before Senator Emmerich?
Privilege of the floor, Mr. President.
You may.
In the viewing gallery for the fishbowl, we have the Prairie Winds fifth grade students. And we have Mrs. DeBrun, Mrs. Peacock, and Mrs. Grease. Would you welcome them to the Senate?
Hey! Senator Wasberger.
Thank you, Mr. President. We'd like to welcome today the sheriffs and chiefs from across the state of Wyoming and remind everybody that there's no such thing as a free lunch, but a free lunch from the Sheriff's Association today. So stand and welcome them to the Senate.
Glad we got that cleared up. I thought all those fifth graders were in uniforms. All right, Senator, I didn't mean it that way. I meant, never mind. It didn't come out the way. It's not nearly as funny. Turn the mic up. Senator Ross, we're going to go ahead, Senator, but not on the pun because it didn't go very well.
Mr. President, there was a guy named Mark Twain that one time said that when you find yourself in a hole, you should quit digging.
I agree with that. It's done. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. I've been running in and out of here. You probably see me buzzing around. For some reason, I can't find my... we have a booklet that we can get to you. We hired a company called Design Mind to do the level, the initial design of the of our interpretive center exhibits and displays. That was vetted by the Oversight Committee. You've all seen, those that are on the Oversight have seen it all. Design Minds went out throughout the state. They talked to teachers. They talked to businessmen. They had done the exhibits and the interpretive designs for the State Museum. That's why you see the money in State Parks and Cultural Resources, because they and the Department of Tourism have teamed up together to help us. They have put some of their money into this to help us with this. And so what you have, if we had time, I would show you that. But there's been a lot of thought. This isn't just something willy-nilly out there that that was just dreamed up. We really embarked on a thoughtful plan for how we could do this. This is simply for the infrastructure so that you can do it. It's totally prudent to do it now versus later. But that's a policy question for you folks to decide. But I can tell you that it'll be money well worth it being spent. There was also statistics that were drawn up from other capitals and their visits, and from the Department of Tourism as to what it would do, dollars back, and how long it would take for us to recoup this money. And it's astonishing how quickly you recoup it if you do these things right. And so I'd urge your favorable consideration.
Or to just a reminder not to use the proper names of the consultants themselves. Senator Bebout for the final discussion on this amendment.
And thank you, Mr. President. I appreciate the discussion on this particular issue. A couple of things, Mr. President. First of all, I want to be sure that all the members of the Senate understand that there was no effort by your Capital Oversight Committee or members of that to hide this in any way, shape, or form. It clearly was brought above. It was always represented to everybody that it was over and above the $300 million. There was never anything done behind doors or anything in that arena. The President of the Senate makes good arguments, and I appreciate what he said, and quite frankly, he spent a lot of time on this. I just have a different perspective. And when I look at the overall situation of the state, and when you look at this, the $990,000 is just a start. I want you all to understand that. When you make that decision to go forward, you're looking at additional money, additional money down the road. So be prepared for that. It's going to happen. You know, I've been around a lot of capitals, and I've seen capitals that have these in there, and it's really nice, no question about it. I have also seen capitals out there that do not have it. And in my interpretation, the way I look at it, of course, I'm an engineer. I'm more practical in a lot of ways. I thought they were beautiful in their own right. I still think that the capital without this would be a tremendous place for tourism and everybody else. The thing I've always tried to come up with, and when you evaluate something, they always talk about the number of people that go and how it helps tourism and more people are impressed with it, they do it. And I go back to the State Museum and the money we spent there so everybody would have a better place to visit and do all that. Yet when I go over there, I've been over there several times, there's nobody there visiting it. And I don't know how you quantify the value of tourism and that for people. I mean, you can go on and on and on and add and add and add. This is just not the time to be doing that, Mr. President. Now, the last thing is, and my colleague from Sheridan County talks about that building. I agree with you on that, but we're looking at a lot of issues with the president. I didn't necessarily mean that this $990,000 would be spent on that North facility demolition. I think we ought to leave it in there. We talk about the issues at the prison. I think that's money better spent and more well spent to deal with the current issues and real problems we have than on this. So good discussion, and just understand that I'm proud of being on that Capital Oversight Committee, and I really compliment all those people that are on that and the hard work they put into it. Thank you, Mr. President.
The question is, on second reading amendment number 3, will the reading clerk please call the roll?
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
No.
No. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Co?
No.
No. Cooper?
Aye.
Aye. Kraft?
No.
No. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
No. Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
No.
No. Escobel?
No.
No. Geis?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
No.
No. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Johnson?
No.
No. Kinski?
No.
No. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer? Aye. Pappas?
No.
No. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Bomfladern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Nicholas?
No.
No. Closing vote? Kinski, no to aye. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 19 aye, 11 no.
Second reading amendment number 3 has been adopted. We're on second reading amendment number 4. If the reading clerk would please read in the amendment.
File 41, second reading amendment number 4, corrected copy. Page 16, line 10.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 4 to Senate file 41. Mr. President, we've been working diligently for, seems like, 8 or 10 years to have an opportunity to put into the private sector some land that's controlled by the Department of Corrections up in Riverton at the Honor Farm. And everything's is in place now, Mr. President, to move that forward, hopefully have an auction and see what we can do about getting that land back into the private sector. Part of that, Mr. President, as you recall, the study and bills we had several years ago, that money goes back into the Department of Corrections to be utilized to acquire additional lands to offset and be able to allow the Department of Corrections and the Honor Farm to continue their mission. What this amendment does, Mr. President, just ensures that all expenditures of those general funds shall be made with approval of the State Building Commission. I think it's important that they stay in the loop. I would ask for your support.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just had a question for the sponsor on this, just a kind of technical question, but just wanted to make sure this land wasn't in the original statehood enactment and, you know, came with the lands with the state for those type of facilities.
Any further discussion before the sponsor takes this? Senator Burns.
Yes, Mr. President, question for the sponsor. I thought I recalled that that land couldn't be sold until they had found other land for the Honor Farm to purchase.
Any further questions before the sponsor takes his final? Back to the sponsor, Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. For my second time, to answer the first question, my colleague from in the western part of the state, this is not the land that was required originally under the Constitution. It's state-acquired lands at a later date, so you can, in fact, dispose of it this way. But it will be a public auction either way, and it goes to the highest bidder, and it will be sold for no less than the appraisal that we have in place. And to answer the question from my colleague from Sheridan County, that's not a requirement. However, what the state building or the SLID board has done is they've gone out there and they've looked at a piece of ground that will allow them to complete that mission, and they're in the final stages of negotiating to buy that. So if the sale goes forward, then they'll have the money to offset that.
There does not appear to be a Senator Escobel.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. Can I ask a question? Or
I'll go ahead.
Yeah, well, thank you. Mr. President, I was just wondering, in regard to the lands in question, I certainly agree that the land should be sold for the highest bidder if it moves in that direction. However, I just wonder if there'd be any conditions or stipulations as to the best use of the land or how the land might be used by the different bidders.
Thank you. Back to Senator Bebout to answer the question.
Yeah, Mr. President, if it's okay with you for my third time, that's exactly why this has come up, is because the higher and better use of that. If you're familiar with Riverton, and you're on the north part of town, you see where there's a large store, big rectangular box, and I think you know what the kind of store that I'm talking about. The land right next to that is this farmland, and quite frankly, part of this land is not even available for farming. It's too wet. So really the highest and best use is for commercial and for allow the city of Riverton to go in that direction.
The question is, on second reading number 4, it does not appear to have an appropriation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That's been adopted. We're on second reading number 5. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate file 41, second reading amendment number 5, page 17, line 23.
Senator Ross.
Thank you,
President, move second reading amendment number 5 to Senate File 41. This is technical cleanup language brought to me by staff. Urge your favorable consideration.
Questions on second reading number 5. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That's been adopted. We're on second reading number 6. Senator Von Fladen. And please.
Senate File 41, second reading amendment number 6, page 1, line 10.
Senator Von Fladen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second reading number 6 to Senate File 41. And since it's second reading, I'll try not to explain the whole road project again. I think you're quite familiar with the secondary access that has to be erected prior to mining through Highway 59 north of Gillette. That's what this amendment goes into. Let me explain the amendment, and then I'll give you a brief overview of the reasons. So page one, line 10, you just, after appropriations, insert providing for funding of mineral-impacted road projects. So we found a way to fund this without affecting YDOT, which then means stealing money from YDOT, which means your local road projects would have had to suffer because of that. So what we've done with this is we found a way to pay for it and make sure YDOT is kept whole. Page 18 after line 12, you insert, this would be under the section that says appropriations from investment earnings derived in fiscal year 17. So that could be all the way to 17, June 30th of 18, before these may come available. And on the top of that, you'd put a 1. That takes it a priority list, makes it number 1 in that priority list ahead of the projects listed. And then in there you insert 045 mineral impacted roads, and over under the amount you put to be determined. And then page 18, line 13, 14, 15, 16, you renumber. Then you go to the bottom of that page after line 27 and you insert that little number 5 that you just put up there under mineral impacted roads. And then you say to the extent highway funds are deposited in that account, that amount is appropriated for deposits to the highway fund, to YDOT, basically. Funds deposited to the highway fund and in this section shall not be subject to any reversions or lapses. So over the next couple of years it takes to design, engineer, and then actually construct that road, these monies won't revert. Then you go to page 20. This is 2018's money. So this could be available as late as June 30th of 18, and only if everything does not go to heck on us, and we do have some money in there. And once again, you basically put that same language in there. On page 20, after line 12, you put as a priority number 1 this mineral impacted roads, and then you put a little 5 at the bottom of that page, and you do the duplicate language that's above. And talks about reversions, and the reversions won't revert. The funds won't revert. Then you go to page 25, and on page 25, when I can get there, there's a whole new section 13, which is called Mineral Impacted Road Account. And on that, you can read as well as I can on section 13A, little a. And things I want to point out to you is, monies from the highway fund shall be used as necessary to provide a total of $24,200,000, which is what we were talking about on the last amendment on another bill we talked that I removed. Department, and then on one of the lines of line 23 of the amendment, the Department of Transportation shall submit an exception budget request to the governor for inclusion in the 1920 biennial budget, requesting an appropriation to the highway fund an amount equal to any funds expended from that fund to meet the requirements of this section, to the extent the funds have not been repaid. In other words, if the funding coming through the 17 and 18 priority list have not made that $24 million, YDOT could loan us the money, but they would go back to the budget in 1920 and ask to be repaid. That way we do not hurt the road programs in your towns or anywhere else. Section B, provide where project, which the county has line 36 and 7 on your amendment. The funds in the account shall be used to provide funding for one or more projects to which a county has provided a binding commitment to pay 29.25% of the anticipated cost. So there's that upfront money that has to be paid by the county and or the mines. And that letter that was given out earlier will show you what that division is, a couple million from the county, 4 million from one mine, 4 point some million, 3 point some million from another. Money that they would have paid anyway, so they're paying their own part. This money is going to pay for a road for the safety of those employees. This is not subsidizing the mines because the mines are paying what they would have paid anyway to put those roads in. So this is so let's get on with the amendment, my 5 minutes. 41 through 43 on your amendment says reach agreement with Department on anticipated cost of the project and construction management of the project. In other words, YDOT will negotiate with the county who will do the planning, the design work, the engineering, the contractual. That still may stay with the county, but it will be run through. And my time is up, and I will tell you on the next page, it does say they pay $10 million up front. That will be paid by the entities involved in this and not state money.
Discussion on the amendment. There being none, Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman. I'd like to follow up a little bit on this discussion with a comment that was made in the prior discussion where someone said, folks, this $15 million is operating to the benefit of secured creditors, and I don't know if everybody knows what that means. There's two kinds of bankruptcy. Chapter 11, where you're just dead flat broke, liquidation, or Chapter 7. And Chapter 11, which is a reorganization. Now, what is a reorganization? Well, think of a leading presidential candidate with a bad comb-over who has boasted that he's taken his companies through bankruptcy and come out profitable on the other side. That's what reorganization is. So in the hierarchy of debt in a bankruptcy, the people on the bottom pile are what's called unsecured creditors. You shipped a product to somebody, you don't have a mortgage, you don't have a lien on their copier, they go broke, you're just out of luck. There's bondholders, there's secured creditors. Those people who hold a mortgage is in effect. Bondholders always come ahead of the shareholders. So there's all these people trying to, standing in line, trying to get money out of the bankruptcy. And what they do is they belabor this company. Everybody's trying to collect their money, and the company cannot conduct what's called the ordinary course of business. So you go in to bankruptcy and say, Judge, get all these people off my back. Let me continue the ordinary course of business. And when the judge says they can do that, you can go out and borrow more money. So the company that we're talking about, several years ago, there was a huge mine disaster in Appalachia. Their stock plummeted. The company we're talking about borrowed $7.1 billion, borrowed that money to buy that company. They levered up. That's a risk that they took. Now they're in reorganization, and what they'll do is they'll shed hundreds of millions of dollars of debt, come out clean and profitable on the other side. And there will be secured creditors who operates to the benefit of that. They'll be the people that come out on top. So my concern is, in the past, the mines have built these roads, and I believe that they are capable of building this road, as has happened in the past, because they have secured debtor-in-possession financing of $692 million to help them reorganize. This is just an accepted modern business tactic to shed debt and come out profitable. And in fact, the Powder River Basin properties are the crown jewel that this company has. They may end up being flipped out into a wholly separate company. So when somebody said the other day, folks, this money is operating to the benefit of the secured creditors, that's what it means, because those secured creditors who would otherwise give them the money to build the road, that money's coming from us. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. President.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Let's start from the right. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I've listened and I tried to follow. It sounded like a pea going from one shell to one shell to one shell. And what I can't figure out is where's the money coming from ultimately, because basically, as I understand it, we're dedicating some state money to building a particular local road. And maybe that's a good thing. This is the community that, and the area that's provided a lot of that revenue. There may be a real need and a real justice there, but I can't figure out where the money's coming from.
Let's go last. Any other questions before the sponsor goes this last time? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. You want to remember there's two mining companies involved here. One is not in any sort of receivership. They are the major one that is putting up the major amount of the money. The minor part of the money comes from the referenced coal company that's in Chapter 11.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. President, a little further explanation. This isn't one company, and the one company that's there is paying. They're paying their money in. So is another one that doesn't have to. So is the county. This is a joint effort by a whole bunch. It's not one piece of road. It is a whole length of road. It benefits hundreds of people that lay north that are isolated from the town. This thing's been simplified down into a simple little project that we're trying to help a company that's in bankruptcy. Absolutely not true. We're trying to make a road functional that works through a second route that was offered and basically demanded by a group of people. And our good highway commission had the good wisdom to see that it was a good and necessary project. They have looked at it. We've all looked at it. We went through all this before. Now we got everybody wanting to put it back into one deal. This is a community project with a lot of different entities involved and skin from all. The county's guaranteed all the excesses on the thing. It's all been put together in really a good fashion that works to the benefit of not only the entire basin, but the entire state. This is an artery for all of us.
Senator Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and in favor of the amendment, my name is on it. This was crafted carefully. But the one thing I do want to say is that the vast majority of this road is not on the land that the bankrupt mine company owns. And in fact, that mining company is paying their share for their portion of the road. That comes in on the north side. When the east side along Camplex, that is both a city property, a county property, and then when it gets to the north, it dead ends, and so a new road will be built across about 4 miles to connect to Highway 59, and it will create a bypass. And so when we say we're worried about a company that is bankrupt, they're paying for their side of the road. And the only reason we're talking about the bypass on the east side is because YDOT, as the good senator from Crook County said yesterday, held a meeting. At that meeting, those people said they were upset about where the road was going to be. And so YDOT required the mines to build another road or the county. So it becomes a city, state, and county problem. So on and in favor of the amendment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, the coal companies are paying their share for the road going by there where that property is. That's not my concern. My concern are the miles of additional road going up there, and so my question is threefold. One is, who from this bill, the AML funding bill, is not going to get their money because this is stepping in front of them? My next question is, why does this road have to be built to state standards? This is a county road, and the hundreds of people that the good senator from Devil's Tower is talking about, his constituents, and they're good people, and they're nice people, but that hundreds of people we're talking about are over 100 miles of people. This is the main route to Broadus, Montana.
I don't know how many of you have been to Broadus, Montana, but not many. Because not a lot of people go to Broadus, Montana. So why do we need a highway set to state standards that the state's paying for? The last question was a question I asked the last time this came up, and it wasn't answered. And that is, what are the reserves of the county for a county road? And they've got $184,986,617 in cash with liabilities of $11 million. That is a balance sheet any county would envy, and frankly, that's a balance sheet the state currently envies. It's a county road. I don't understand why they suddenly have to step in front of a lot of other needy projects on this list. And I would like to hear from the sponsors if they have figured out who exactly is not going to get their money because of this project.
Senator Driscoll, for your second time.
And last, Mr. President, thank you. I'm going to answer just a couple of the rhetorical ends of it. One, who has been to Broadus, Montana? I have. If you turn the other direction, you go directly into the Bakken oil field. That's the major commerce outside of Wyoming right now. There is truckload after truckload after truckload of oil field supplies that go out of Casper, Wyoming to the Bakken. They go by all the time. This road is a conduit. We talked about conduits in the capital. This is a conduit. Highway 59, folks, used to be a little country road that wandered through about three blocks of Gillette, Wyoming. You didn't hardly have to stop. You whipped right through. You went on by. When you come in on 59 now, you've got about 8 or 9 miles of stoplights going through the middle of a fairly major city right now. It's not an easy place to get through with big trucks or traffic, and the routes around Gillette have not happened the way they have in some other places. This is going to be the new Highway 59. That's why it's the highway standards. When you're going to be able to get done with this, I believe, and I hope I'm not right, I can be corrected, but probably with one or two stoplights, you're going to be able to drive 65 miles an hour when you come south of Gillette all the way to the Bakken. Maybe a little higher if we do some things right here. So this is a conduit. It's a road of commerce for all of us. It's not just for Campbell County. It's for all of Wyoming. It's for the people that live north. It has safety. And above all, where did the AML come from and what was it for? Let's all think about that as we're doing money. And I agree, the entire state was impacted. But this county's been impacted my entire life. I happen to live next door to it. It's a place that we kind of stayed away from, frankly, for a while because it was so busy you couldn't get in and out of it. We owe it to make it safe and convenient for the people to get to their jobs, their ranches, and their businesses. That part of it I can answer to you. Let's make the conduit right. We've built loop roads with state money around every one of these towns. I look at brown square signs around nearly every one of these towns. One of them we're in right now, one of them in the middle. Gillette has not been blessed with that, folks. Let's do this right.
Senator Wasserberger. No? Okay. Senator Vebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Just to answer the one question about who's losing the money in the AML funds, a very good question, and that's the whole purpose of this, is nobody will be affected in the AML funds. It's set up, if you look on the bill, on the amendment on page 2, it really gets into the crux of it starting on line 13, and you'll see there that there's 24.2, and if that doesn't occur, they have a mechanism set up with the money that's available from outside sources as well as YDOT to pay for it. So nobody in the AML bill will have any cuts or reductions.
For the last and final time to the sponsor, Senator Von Platern.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have no idea where those reserve numbers came from the good senator on the other senator from Sheridan at the end of the row here. The 189 million or something in reserves, no idea that we had that. It would be great if we did. And 11 million liabilities, they have to run a whole county. So I assume the liability is higher than 11 million. That doesn't even seem to cover wages for a county that has a couple hundred employees. But I really can't answer that question there. The fact of the first mine, we're dealing with two mines here. One's very healthy and has quite a few local customers. Your REA list that I gave you basically is part of that same group. I will say that the first mine We have the one that is in bankruptcy. The county, in their agreements to the original agreement to build that secondary road and to pave it in the near future when they had monies available, they were already escrowing the 3.2 roughly million that that mine would be putting. So they'll get that money up front. The county is not going to get hung for paying the whole $7 million, $6 million if you count what the other one's putting in, by letting that other, getting behind the other creditors. So to get that road built, they will escrow that money up front. And as was referred to, who's getting cut out? Nobody. The priority list is there. It stays there. If monies are available from the SIPA account, that will flow to the various entities. The road project or the Campbell County project, Mineral Impact, it took first place on that, moving others down the list. And Highway 59, as far as being this podunk little town, is the main thoroughfare that connects two interstates from Douglas, Wyoming, up through Gillette. It then goes into the eastern Montana oil fields, so we're seeing a lot of oil field traffic, truckloads of pipe going by us, drilling equipment, and then it goes into the western North Dakota Bakken fields. So that is a major highway. It is not some small little highway. And someday, all that traffic, and if you looked at a map real quickly, and if we built that secondary road and didn't do any other secondary access and didn't do any other improvements to the Goner Lake Road, you would see that road filled with trucks on a little county road trying to compete with all the employees out of a power station, the integrated test center, two different mines, and three small businesses, plus the local rancher trying to move his sheep or his cows. So with that, Mr. President, I think I answered most of the questions.
We're on second reading, number 6. Roll call.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
No.
No. Case?
No.
No. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe? Cooper?
Aye.
Aye. Coe? Co. I. Kraft.
Aye.
I. Dockstetter.
Aye.
I. Driscoll.
Aye.
I. Emmerich.
Aye.
I. Escobel.
Aye.
I. Geis.
Aye.
I. Hastert.
Aye.
I. Hicks.
Aye.
I. Johnson.
Aye.
I. Kinski.
No.
No. Landon.
Aye.
I. Meyer.
No.
Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
No.
No. Von Fladern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Nicholas?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 24 aye, 6 no.
Can I call the vote, or would you like me? Trying to skip me up here. Second reading number 6 has passed the Senate. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? If not, would the chief clerk please call the roll? Actually, this is the second reading. Second, Senate File 41, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senator Meyer.
Mr. President, I would like the Senate to help me welcome Trail Elementary from Torrington, Wyoming, fourth grade. Yes.
Trail Elementary.
Yeah. And their teacher, Sheila Baver. So, hello, Sheila.
Senator Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Would like to announce Dr. Paul Young from Northern Wyoming Community College in our audience. Welcome, Dr. Young.
Hi. Senator Bebout.
Mr.
President, I would also like to welcome the president of Central Wyoming College, Mr. Chris Valdez, is in the audience as well.
Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. I would like to welcome the very beautiful president of Western Wyoming Community College, Carla Leach.
Yeah. Do you have any messages or reports? We have reports from standing committees.
February 17, 2016, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, to whom was referred Senate File 63, Economic Development Programs Revisions, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Coe, Cooper, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern. Senator Anderson excused. Senator Cooper, acting chairman. February 18, 2016, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporations, to whom was referred Senate File 99, Emergency Medical Services, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott. Senator Case, chairman.
Any further reports or messages? There being none, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk. We're at that order of business of bills on general file. Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move the Senate resolve itself in committee of the whole to discuss bills on general file.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senator Case. 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 Oh. Senator Case, where are you?
Well, there was a little line in there.
Thank you. I see the top sheet up there, so I can remind myself here. You can have the paper.
Okay.
Oh. Thank you.
Yep.
The committee of the whole will please come to order. The first bill or file for our consideration is Senate File. Sorry.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first file for our consideration is Senate File 85. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 85, Medical Education, sponsored by Senator Nicholas, an act relating to medical education. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, to whom was reports back a do pass amended recommendation. Ayes, Senators Coe, Dockstader, Landon, Pappas, and Rothfuss. Senator Coe, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Mr. Chairman, move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report do so with do pass recommendation on Senate File 85. There is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
Reading clerk, please read the amendment.
Senate File 85, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 2.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment and defer to Mr. President for explanation of the Standing Committee Amendment and the bill.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, this bill is sets up an oversight committee to oversee the activities of and the appropriations, the implementation of the WAMI program. That's the Wyoming, Washington, Alaska, Montana, Idaho medical school program. What it does is set up a task force to be appointed by the governor, not a task force, but a new council to be set up by the governor with the advice and consent of the trustees. This board will report to the folks at the dean of the health sciences, to the president, and ultimately directly to the trustees. The effort here, folks, is that what we've created now a fairly large institution, which is the education of our medical students. And what we're finding, frankly, is that it's being overseen by a Department of Health Sciences that does not have physicians and not operated by physicians. And yet, when you look out at the state of Wyoming, what a wonderful resource do we have with all the returning WAMI students. We have physicians who not only were educated at other institutions, but they have their children who have been educated. I'm thinking of a surgeon in Casper whose son went to the WAMI program. We have phenomenal people out there who really have the expertise in medical education. We have created advisory boards in the past. In fact, we created one recently with one of our standing committees. The advisory committee went out. In fact, they said, thank you for inviting us to us. Now, as you implement this new education program to bring longer length studies on UW campus, you should, I really think we ought to be involved in how that implements. The advisory committee was disbanded, really through legislative concern, and there was sort of an ad hoc reassimilation. But, folks, what we really are looking for here is to solicit the assistance of physicians throughout the state who are actively interested in the success of medical education program, create an advisory oversight committee to really watch this program, make sure it is operated correctly, and to give them enough authority in the program so that they're not simply coming in as advisory committees do around campus where they come in and have a lunch and leave. What we're looking for is somebody that rolls up their sleeves, make sure this program is well done. Now, there is a problem, and we don't know the exact answer. And what we do with the family practice residency programs, over on page 5, lines 8 through 9, what we've simply done is maybe have them make recommendations to the family practice residency programs. Folks, those programs have their own institutions that look at them. Whether this is the right group, I don't know, but I do know this. I've been to trustees' committees where they've tried to take information on the family practice programs. Are these teaching programs? Are they simply in the two largest communities to provide health care for an indigent population? What exactly is their role? When they run out of the money, they come to go to the trustees. The trustees throw up their hands and says, I don't know, we don't know. I do think that this is an opportunity to maybe use physicians who are experts that are on these committees to at least give some of their advice and recommendations to the trustees with respect to the role. I believe that the family practice programs will require more detail, greater exercise of effort to determine where they belong in the future of our health care delivery services throughout the state, as well as the training programs. But for purposes of this, I don't think I had an answer to that, so we simply there say make recommendations, changes, if any, to the family practice program, and primarily focusing on the delivery of educational services. Ladies and gentlemen, I think this is a bill that's required. It is in large part mirrored in after the success of the School of Energy Resources Council that really focuses on that energy school, make sure it attends to the population, to the folks that are interested in the success of the program, interested in making sure that SER delivers a product that's helpful to the private sector. We don't want to do anything that would jeopardize the success of this program, and it requires a paternal hand on it, and I think this is the committee, a council that would have the capacity to do so and make sure it stays a flagship program for the next 50 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Anybody else on discussion on the file? Senator Scott. 1 second. There you go.
Mr. Chairman, with regard to the family practice centers, and let me say with regard to both all the institutions here, they have been doing there's some colorful tales of how they came into being, particularly the residency centers, but they have been doing exactly what we needed to have done, and that is getting more of the physicians, particularly primary care physicians, that we really need into our state, and they've been doing a good job in one case in line with national expectations as to what you get out of a center like this. We're even doing even better than, I think, the national retention rate when it comes to the WAMI students. So they've been very successful. We have had on occasion problems with the family practice residency centers. They have a dual role. They both train physicians, and because the only way you can train physicians at that level is to let them see and treat real patients. They then wind up with a healthcare role in the community they're located in particular, and they do rotations, some of them, in other parts of the state. And so they do help us that way, but that help is secondary. But it can be expensive if it's, and we had some problems. They had to do, Mr. Chairman, with personalities, both the personalities that caused the problem have been disposed of, but there's a residual problem there. And we keep saying we need to somehow get this clinical training done cheaper, and it's hard to do. So I think this new advisory committee may have an important role. I wonder if it needs to be broadened a bit, whether some of the medical education things, I think especially physicians, are very useful, having all had personal experience with medical education and how it served them or did not serve them when they went into practice. But there's some other issues with regard to the residency centers. I wonder if the membership is proper, and I wonder what the discussions with the university have been on how they see the structuring of this new advisory committee and what they see its values are.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, as we discussed this, there have been advisory committees in the past, and in fact, there are advisory committees throughout many of the colleges. There's an advisory committee to the, for example, a National Advisory Board for the College of Engineering, et cetera. These advisory boards do not have, are simply that, they're there to advise the dean and try to interact with the private or the residents of Wyoming, those that look for engineers, for example. The purpose of this bill is to go one step further and create an oversight committee that actually has a little more teeth, and that's the purpose of the standing committee amendment, which is number one, and what it does deletes the word advisory, puts in oversight just to make sure that it has a little more teeth and that they have a direct responsibility reporting to the trustees to get non-filtered communication to the trustees that doesn't go through the college. If there's no questions with respect to that, I would call for the question on the standing committee amendment, number one, that's already been moved by Senator Coe.
Any questions on the standing committee amendment? Any questions? Seeing none, call for the question. All those in favor of Senator Coe's standing committee amendment, number one, to Senate File 85, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is carried. Back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, with respect to the family practice residency programs, we could spend a lot of time discussing that and some of the questions and issues that are raised by the good senator from Natrona County are well-founded. I would mention that one thing about the WAMI program, I can look around and see at least several of us who have had children go through the WAMI program or are going through it. And when you're, if you
I think if you were recommended, in fact, I've got a brother who's a physician and spoke many times to many folks looking at matching for the residency programs. And if you were to, if you're a resident and you went out and counseled with many, with a lot of physicians and they said, where should I perform my residency? You might find that the answer is you should go to a large center where you see a lot of very, very sick people and you see a lot of differentiations of cases and you will learn more. And so when you, if the purpose of the family practice program is to educate our WAMI students and to teach them, or to try to entice the WAMI students back into the family practice program, that's a reasonable debate to have. You may want your students to go to a larger facility for their residency programs and bring that experience back to Wyoming. But when you go back historically and look at the family practice programs, and we began those residency programs well before we had 20 students and the numbers of students we have moving forward, we were looking for more physicians to be recruited to the state in the area of family practice. And it was our intention there not only in part to recruit and reach out to folks to come perform their family practice residencies in Wyoming with the hope that they would stay. And that has largely, I think, worked. I think if you look at the two large communities, many of the family practice residents have stayed behind, and they're great doctors. But as a member of your Joint Appropriations Committee, I can tell you that the amount we pay those residents has always been at issue. And we've had to pay them more and more to recruit residents to Wyoming, partly because you are trying to attract somebody to perform their residency in a very small marketplace with limited exposure. And it's always the case. When, with respect to this oversight committee, though, council, it is much broader. It's not focused. The council or the oversight council is intended to look at it much broader, to look at surgeons, all aspects, as we certainly... We would like to have a number of our WAMI students, we would like to encourage them to go into internal medicine, to go into family practice, and to family care programs. But the students also have to meet their other goals, and there are going to be many that are going to be in obstetrics, there are going to be many in orthopedics and things like that, which we need. And that gets into the complexities of this. But there will always be, and there's always room for discussion about whether or not the family practice residency programs were there to recruit residents to come here and stay, or was its primary intent to educate. And if all we're doing is using that multi-million-dollar program to educate a few residents, of which one to stay behind, that's a pretty expensive way to educate your residents. If the purpose, and what we're now that we're up to 20 med students, perhaps we're going, there are other ways to encourage some of those medical students to come to enter in primary care. Offer programs and say, look, if you'll go into primary care, do your residency somewhere else. But, and when you come back, we'll pay off all your debt. We'll encourage you to go into a lower paying residency or a field of medicine, but will pay off all your medical school debt. There are things out there that we can do to try to encourage our WAMI students to focus on family practice and internal medicine, and maybe that's the focus. I would submit to you that over time, the largest support for keeping the family practice residency program is because they support and provide medical services to a large part of two communities and the people that flow to those communities who have no other sources. And that's part of been the support. And so we end up with an institution that we support for a variety of reasons. That's fine. But is it the University of Wyoming trustee's responsibility to be down here and advocating for more money to supply into a family practice residency program whose primary purpose is really not to to train
UW students, but its purpose is to keep, to bring in family practice doctors and to provide indigent care or low-cost care to the community. It's a complicated issue. So all I've done in this amendment is saying, have it take a look at it, but I don't think they can solve the problem. It is a problem that needs to be addressed, and we'll have to devote our attention because year after year, those residency programs need more money for the same reasons that all your health care programs do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Wassenberger, and then we'll go to Scott.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just some quick facts on the WAMI program and then a concern. But right now we have 80 students in that program, and we spend about $77,000 per kid, per student, per year. The students themselves pay $12,400 of tuition each year within that $77,000. So they have skin in the game. They pay about $48,000, $49,000 total by the time they graduate. When they graduate, they are required to come back to the state of Wyoming and serve 3 years. Our percentage is about 70% of the students, 69% of the students come back to Wyoming, and of those that come back, about 60% of those stay the rest of their lives. And my son is going to graduate this spring, so I have watched this closely. The reason for the bill is really because the University of Washington, which right now is the fifth-ranked primary care medical school in the United States. And this is extremely prestigious for us to have our 20 kids there every year. And so when I go out to visit my son, I spend a lot of time with his class. And their biggest worry is there won't be jobs in Wyoming when they graduate. And I look at them and I say over my beer, there'll be jobs. We'll find it. Don't worry about that. But what we do find is the kids who don't come back, typically they married somebody within medical school and they end up going somewhere else, or they go into a specialty that Wyoming does not have the population to serve, which is truly sad. But that's the reality of it. So it's a great program. My concern is, the $12,400 that the kids pay goes into a fund, and that fund is used to help the kids as they literally travel the entire United States, going to different hospitals for rotations in different areas of medicine. And they're academic vagabonds after their second year, essentially. And they go all over. They go to Albuquerque. They go to Iowa City, New York City, everywhere that they can go. And but my concern is, and I think the reason for this council being set up is the University of Washington changed the curriculum. And they changed the curriculum from having our students take their very first year of med school on campus at the University of Wyoming. And if you remember correctly, we built the health sciences building for that purpose. But what the University of Washington decided to do was make Wyoming have an extra semester with those students, which I, as a parent, I really would have enjoyed Jory, my son, having an extra semester at the University of Wyoming. But the worry is, are they getting enough clinical experience? And so the good president has brought this bill. My worry is, are we really requiring too many meetings here? Is there the three meetings a year? Is, I think the med school and our WAMI program has done very, very well without any meetings and just a directorship. So I would ask for some clarification on that.
Senator Scott, you were next.
Yeah. Mr. President, I want to make very clear some things on the family practice residencies. They were created two decades, before we had the opportunity to get into the WAMI program. They were frankly, Mr. President, a compromise after the bill to create a Wyoming medical school was rightly defeated. And they have proved to be the compromise we really need, because family practice physicians are in short supply in these United States, and they have been particularly in short supply in Wyoming. And they were seen, those residencies were seen as a way to get a residency training where you get a good retention rate back into the state. It's around 50%. They go all over the state, Mr. Chairman. But they are in part seen as recruiting, and in part seen as this is a way Wyoming can do its part in medical education. Right now, the world has changed again. There's been quite a push for more family practice physicians. The feds have cut back on other residencies. There's more physicians out there currently, and this is different from the way the world was 10 years ago. But I'm told there are more physicians than can find residency spots. And that's so we don't have to worry about filling them. Matter of fact, Mr. President, if the price of oil was twice what it was right now, or three times, I guess, the way it's gone down, we might be debating should we expand those things, because we could. The shortage is a real problem. The medical treatment has to be secondary, but it has to be there. It absolutely has to be there, or you don't do the job. The students have to treat real patients. And so the primary purpose has always been education of students in the hopes that they will stay here, or that a major percentage of them will stay here. And the patient treatment has always been a secondary objective, but an absolutely necessary one. If you don't do it, you don't have a residency center. So I don't want any confusion arising over that, because if we lose that, we're going to start to have major physician shortage problems, even worse than what we have right now. So they're independent. The WAMI opportunity came along, I think it really was about 20 years after the decision was made on the residency centers. And, Mr. Chairman, one of the smarter things we've done was to take up that opportunity, because it gets us access to one of the nation's premier medical schools, and because that program is particularly suited to this state and its needs. So I'm hoping this, what you want to call it, oversight council or advisory council, whatever you do, will help, one, make sure that we understand and deal appropriately with the needs of the residency centers, because they're very real and they're very important. I hope they will help us exploit the value of both of those institutions in terms of continuing education and similar services to our physician population. Because one of the ways, Mr. Chairman, that a doctor stays sharp in what they do and up to date in what they do is to have some role in teaching. And that has been a benefit to the state. We've taken some advantage of it. I don't think we've taken as much advantage as we could have and should have. So I hope it'll have that role as well. But I detect every now and then a little, well, we could save some money by getting rid of these residency centers, and that will cause us big and expensive problems we probably won't be able to fully solve.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, if your indulgence, may I have the privilege of the floor, because students sometimes have a hard time listening to all this debate.
You know, I don't blame him, Senator Perkins. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, we've got today behind me Josh Thompson and a group of outstanding students from the Transitions Learning Center, which is a great little facility and institution in my district. They do a great job. We've got great students. They came here today. They made it without the bus blowing over. The wind's blowing very hard in certain parts of the state. They went to the wrong side of the bus, and then before they figured they had to go to the other side of the bus to keep the ballast right. So anyway, if you'd welcome Josh and these students, I'd appreciate it.
Welcome to the Senate. Thank you very much. Senator Coe.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I was a big supporter of the bill in committee, and I still am. But I got a question for Mr. President. We had some testimony in committee, I think from the Wyoming Medical Society, who acts in it as an advisory or oversight group now as far as WOWAMI goes. How do you see the interaction with the new group that you're talking about creating? And I like this concept because it's on campus, it's Board of Trustees, it's the School of Health, it's all that stuff. But how do you foresee the interaction with this group that currently exists, that's out there right now, as it interacts with this new oversight committee?
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I do not see a reduction in that role. If anything, I would like to see it increased. But the mechanics of whether or not they work through the dean or they work together, I think the institution will have to sort that out themselves. But I don't see a reduction of that. In fact, since what I expect is that a lot of the physicians that you're looking at recruiting are probably pretty active in the medical society, and I hope to actually improve and give them a stronger sense of it, or a stronger sense of self-determination, if you will, and success. Folks, we've insulated the WAMI program by taking them out of the block grant.
One second, Mr. President. Can we keep the conversation down? The President speaking. Gentleman from Campbell County.
So
back to you, Mr. President.
So we've insulated the program somewhat by putting them in their own object code. That's why you see them in a separate funding category apart from the block grant. But there's all kinds of other competitions that exist in terms of, you've heard the issue with respect to space, where they occupied. So you have a dean of health sciences who's really responsible for all of the colleges that are directly funded. And then you have this albatross, if you will, that's over here, that's the WAMI program. And it seems to me that we would be better off to have this oversight council to make sure it's steered correctly. I think if we had a full-fledged medical school, we would probably have a dean that's a doctor. We would have associate deans that are physicians. We would have a number of physicians that would be operating the medical school. We don't have that, nor could we expect to pay for those types of roles. So what we're really doing is reaching out and using the human resources that we have, who are physicians, that I believe are very paternal about this program. They want to see it succeed. They want to make sure that those doctors are available to come back to our communities. And so let's use the resources and try to mimic more what you would have if you had a full-fledged medical school. As to the three meetings, I think you probably have to have a minimum of those just to make sure everybody's interacting, they see the school, they're keeping it up. But if it turns out that the fewer meetings are required physically in Laramie, they have the options to do different types of meetings without having to physically drive here. They're pretty smart people. They'll figure out how to accomplish that.
Thank you, Senator Nicholas. Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Mr. Chairman. Privilege of the floor.
Absolutely.
Thank you. There's been a group of Prairie Wind Elementary fifth grade students observing this discussion for the last half an hour, and I think they have just left.
I think they're still in the lobby, maybe.
But I would ask you to please stand and welcome them to the Senate.
They're here.
Any further discussion on the file? Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't mean to belabor, but I just wanted to emphasize that I, too, was supporting the committee, and I really do rely on our president to help us understand the workings of the university. And my only hesitations here go to what my tall friend from my county said, and that is that every piece of feedback that I've gotten is that that family practice residency program is just outstanding. And I have to salute the director of that program. I think it's so my hesitation is if as we create a whole new entity here and we lump the family practice residency centers underneath right along with WAMI and everything else, I hope we don't get something lost in the mix. I think we've got some real jewels there, and you know, I hope that this is going to work. My only question to the president would be, if we're comfortable enough that this is going to work with our Department of Health down there, with the deans and on up through the president. I having been in administration before, I hesitate having an outside entity over here that's going to be jumping over the top of everything, and I just hope that that's going to network together and work okay in terms of curriculum and programming, et cetera. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Landon. There is a Committee of the Whole amendment. How about if we deal with that now? Would the reading clerk please read the Committee of the Whole amendment? You have the amendment, the Committee of the Whole amendment. Please read it.
Senate File 85, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 5.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I bring this amendment. There's been quite a discussion the last couple of weeks about governor-appointed boards and commissions and political party splits. As I looked at that, I didn't see any minority members of the party as sponsors on this. Having done that, I did concur or seek advice and opinion from the minority floor leader. I would tell you that I would join his consent that this is probably an issue where it's a nonpartisan board and doesn't require a political split. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would withdraw this amendment.
Thank you, Senator Hicks. Seeing no objection, the amendment is withdrawn. Back on the file. Anything else on the file? The question is on Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 85. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 85 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 96. The reading clerk will please read the file.
Senate File 96, Marijuana Edibles, an act relating to controlled substances, sponsored by Senator Wasserberger.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Christensen? I'm sorry. Go ahead, reading clerk.
Thank you. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Christensen, Escobar, Hicks, and Kinski. No, Senator Von Flatern. Senator Christensen, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Christensen?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation, a favorable
Senator Christensen, can you point your mic a little closer towards you? It's kind of heading out. There, try that.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, does with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 96, and there is a committee amendment.
Here are the amendments. Let's have the reading clerk read in the amendment.
Senate File 96, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 11.
Back to you, Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, we'll go ahead and deal with the remove the committee amendment, and we'll deal with it a little later in the process to present the bill, Senator Wasserberger.
Senator Wasserberger. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Senate File 96, and this is actually a interim study of the Joint Judiciary Committee. And this bill was voted down in the House on introduction, and so we picked it up here, and it was voted in. It's been through the Judiciary Committee. What it essentially does is try and clarify what two district court judges said, essentially, is that edible marijuana is legal in those district courts. And so this would make edible...
Senator Coe.
I don't think it's appropriate on the floor to reference what has happened on a bill down in the House.
I agree. Oh. Senator Coe, thank you.
I didn't know that, but I apologize. Anyway, sorry. Anyway,
please.
It's always good, Mr. Chairman, when we don't recognize the House for anything.
Perhaps that's true, but we better not even go there. Go ahead.
Okay. But what this bill does is make edible marijuana illegal in the state of Wyoming. It closes a loophole in the law. There is no fiscal note. And essentially, the major part of the bill is on page 3, lines 7 through 15. For preparations, compounds, mixtures, or substances, including but not limited to baked goods, candies, drinks, edibles, or any other similar form containing marijuana, and no more than actually 1 pound, and that has been amended. We'll discuss that in a minute. And then Section 8, except as otherwise prohibited in this paragraph, for controlled substance, any other form, no more than 3 grams. And essentially, that's the bill. I have, as a building principal, been very concerned since a state to the south of us has legalized marijuana and the amount of drugs that came into our schools as a result of that. And the real concern is that they can essentially take marijuana, heat it up, turn it into an oil, put that into gummy bears, and each gummy bear is like 3 hits of a marijuana cigarette that was years ago. It's much more potent. It's much more, it's got a lot more power to the drug itself. And so I bring this bill, and I would turn it over to the committee chairman to do the standing committee amendment.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The standing committee amendment number 1 rolls into page 3, line 11. We delete 1 pound, insert 3 ounces. Members of the body, the reason for this, and you heard a little bit about it, but so much of the conversation about edible marijuana seems to be linked back to ideas or experiences or urban lore from 30 or 40 years ago. And the change that we know now is that in the 1970s, marijuana averaged 2% THC. Well, now the plant form is up around 30%. And then the challenge with the edibles, once it's been refined, it can be as high as 70%. And so we're talking about a very, very different product as it moves in, especially into the edibles. When the sponsor talked about the amount, 3 doses per gummy bear, and that comes from the manufacturer's suggestion. So this isn't this isn't lore. This is what the manufacturers are saying: 1 gummy bear, 3 doses. And the way to think about that, there are 36 bears in a package, some packages, 36 bears in a package, so 108 doses in a package that you hold in your hand. And there may be some people that have sat down and ate an entire bag of gummy bears in one sitting. But in this case, when we start talking about the volume and the content and the potential lethality to this, 108 doses, and that's how that can be spread around. So it's a very different product, and the original bill as proposed says 1 pound. When we look at the strength and the ability to have it in a very small amount, that's why we come back with this amendment for 3 ounces. One of the other concerns and the reason I think to take this amendment very seriously is when you look at the packaging coming out of...
Keep it down the back row back there.
Still can't hear over the roar.
Go ahead, Senator Christensen. What's good for the goose, good for the gander. Go ahead.
Thank you. Appreciate the silence. One of the things that's important to know about these edibles and why this lowering of the threshold is so important is these edibles are really packaged toward our youth and people with good hearing. And, for example, if I could use some street names or some packaging names in this example to make my point, Mr. Chairman, would that be appropriate?
Leeway.
Thank you. For example, you are all familiar with the packaging on a Reese's peanut butter cup. Well, now there are peanut butter cups or that appear to be peanut butter cups that are called hashers. The Almond Joy packaging, there's a very similar look that's called Ganja Joy. And this idea of appealing to children, appealing to our youth, and in the case of this, you're actually talking about very young children who may like an Almond Joy candy bar, and here they pick up a Ganja Joy. And so this is it's a serious issue. Remember the difference in strength and the product. But one other thing I'd like to leave you with is to caution the body not to be confused with the argument it's just a brownie. What you're seeing from our neighbors to the south is a very commercialized focus, a very intense marketing focus to move prepackaged products up. It's easier to go buy a Ganja Joy, last time I'll use that, Mr. Chairman, but to buy one of those than it is go home and bake something and come up with the right creations and so forth. So we really need to think about this more in the commercial form and respect what the very own manufacturers say, 3 doses per gummy bear. The 3-ounce limit is much more appropriate than the 1 pound. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Christensen. Who's next? Senator Burns, let's get you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have a concern about over-criminalizing things, and as we have seen, especially those on JAC, and everybody else, when we're looking at the issue we have with jail space and prison space and so forth. Not that I'm necessarily against the amendment. I want a clarification question. For that paragraph, G, on page 3, preparations, compound, mixture, substances, right now it says 1 pound. The amendment would be 3 ounces. Does that count the brownie itself or the everything in addition to the drug? So if I've got myself a brownie that weighs 1/4 pound, am I now in the felony area?
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, the general question touches on, compounds, and this language is very similar to all of our drug language bills, where it has, for example, cocaine. It isn't about the purity, it's about the general weight. It's the same with all the other issues, and so that's why we're being consistent with this. You don't know what's going on in there, and I just add one more thing when we talk about the gummy bear example versus the brownie example. When the manufacturer says 3 servings per gummy bear, what has been learned down in Colorado and the big newspaper in the big city said that tests show that the labels don't actually match the level. And so this is really about it. I'd ask you to think about it's more of a safety issue on who these products are targeting and worry less about the amount of flour, sugar, something that might be in a baked good when we already know the incredible high dosages that come out of small candy-like looking items.
But, Senator Christensen, to answer the good senator's question, it is the total weight of the item, right?
Yes.
Okay. Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I caution everybody to be careful on this amendment. What you're saying, and I agree with everything the good senator from over in Idaho said, that we... that we definitely have an issue with the manufactured products. But this law is for all Wyoming residents. So if somebody has, in the example that was given in committee, a bottle of homemade vinegar, olive oil type stuff that sits on the counter and they're letting it stew, and they throw a sprig of marijuana in there, has no THC content to it. It's a stem that somebody may have even thrown in there that it wouldn't even have to be them. That bottle weighs over 3 ounces. So suddenly you've created a felon. And you create a felon out of somebody that has a very large, at this amendment of 3 ounces, a very large cookie. That's over 3 ounces. That person may have been, that cookie may have been manufactured in a kitchen where the cook was helping himself to something along the lines of a cigarette-type marijuana. And just the dog picking up, the drug-sniffing dog picking up that smell on the cookie, because they have no test for the THC in that cookie, just that alone would be evidence, and it weighs 3.1 ounces. That person's a felon. No guns, no voting rights, and facing 5 years in jail. There's something wrong with that system. There is a test coming out that will define the THC quantity content of an object. That's what we need to wait for. There is judges in this state that are still convicting you of edibles, whatever way they're doing it, but they still are. It's only because of a particular ruling in Laramie County by a judge that has changed this and made it so we want to clarify it. But 3 ounces is being a very dangerous way to do it.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. Senator Kinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are, in this debate, getting high-centered on the exact same question that we got high-centered on in Judiciary Committee. And I appreciate my fellow senator from Sheridan raising the question. Customarily in law enforcement, you all remember the French Connection movie, and they've got whatever it was, cocaine, and they're cutting it with baby milk formula or something. So traditionally, we've never asked in law enforcement how much of that white powder is cocaine and how much is diluent, whatever you diluted it with. If it's over X, it's a felony. If it's under X, it's a misdemeanor. So as a policy matter, we have to ask ourselves whether we're going to continue that with marijuana. The reason this bill is so compelling is that I'm concerned that more and more district judges will follow the ruling of that district judge, and effectively, de facto, we will have legalized marijuana in the state of Wyoming unless we pass a bill, whether it's 3 ounces or 1 pound. And regardless of what we decide as a policy matter to do with marijuana, it shouldn't happen this way, not through a backdoor way like this. I think we've got to move some kind of bill out of here. I think the 3 ounces is, you know, it's hard to say what's right and what's wrong. 1 pound seems like a lot, but we do have the absurd result that a college student who makes a pan of brownies with a trace element of marijuana or THC can be charged with a felony, and somebody with a gummy bear that's got enough THC in it to drop an elephant charged with a misdemeanor. So where we ended up with in Judiciary Committee, in deference to some of the attorneys that spoke to us, is they said you've got to rely on prosecutorial discretion, and the system still relies heavily on that. College student gets caught with a pan of brownies or a joint, they're going to charge him with a misdemeanor. Now, if he gets caught with a warehouse full of brownies, then they're looking at a felony. And I think we just have to rely on that prosecutorial discretion, because we've got to move something through both houses, or else we de facto have legalized marijuana in the state of Wyoming. I agree with Senator Von Flattern. We heard initially in committee that a test which would actually say it's illegal to have anything that has so many parts per million of THC. We were initially told there's no lab that can do it. Next committee, there's labs that can do it, but they're not certified. Third meeting, they say, well, there's labs that can do it and are certified, but they're expensive. So on judiciary, we figure probably the next session or the session after, we'll know enough about what these labs can and cannot do that we may come back with a bill that talks about the concentration level of THC rather than the raw weight of the THC, including the diluent or the brownies. So rising on and for the amendment in the bill, I think we've got to pass these and avoid the unintended consequence of de facto legalizing in the state of Wyoming.
Further discussion on the amendment? Senator Ruffus, I didn't see you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My concern is similar to the concern about the concentration and mass basis relative to just what recipe was used. If you think about it, this is so easy to circumvent and change by just using a low mass, a high concentration. So if I want to sell a product after this passes and I don't want it to be a felony, I make it a 2-ounce product. There's no question about it. This is trivial. You get concentrated THC, you concentrate it into the gummy bear, and you make the gummy bear twice the concentration. These might not be the sharpest people in the world, but simple dilution math, I think, is well within the capability of somebody who's trying to market THC products. Even that's right. If we want to put something together as a body that addresses this problem, it has to have some link to the mass basis or the drug concentration basis or something along those lines. Even if there isn't a hard, fast test, there needs to be some tangible link to that for it to make sense. Because, again, the concept, which is similar to my good friend from up in Campbell County was talking about, if I have one of those gummy bears that are high concentration, that's fine. That's a misdemeanor. If I actually were to put it on the top of a brownie where that brownie had no THC in it, but now if I think about it as a brownie with a gummy bear on top, well, now you're a felon. And I understand there's always a desire to put confidence in the prosecutors to interpret what we meant because we can't come up with the words that we should be coming up with. But I don't think that's our obligation. I don't think we can just hand the responsibility over to the prosecutors and say, look, we couldn't come up with a way to quantify this well. We couldn't do our job well enough to give you clear direction. So we're just hoping that you'll know what we meant. I don't think that's good legislating. So, Mr. Chairman, I hope we can do a better job if we are going to move this forward and try through the amendment process to link this in some way to a tangible concentration concept. And the fact that historically drug enforcement has not relied on a concentration basis really has been a cause of a lot of the problems in the war on drugs over the years. The fact that you could take an ounce of cocaine and turn it into 20 ounces of crack cocaine, and then all of a sudden you're a massive felon instead of a misdemeanor holder. That's obviously been one of the biggest concerns over the years in the justice aspect of the drug war. So I don't think we should follow along that path just because it's been a well-blazed path. I think that we can do a better job simply by trying to put together some language that gives that a clear directive that this needs to be rationally based or rationally linked to the concentration. And I was wondering, as the senator from Campbell County was giving his discussion and his points, if I have poppy seeds on rolls, right? There's drugs in those poppy seeds, folks. It's there. I don't think it's going to benefit anyone in any way unless you eat a tremendous amount of poppy seeds. But if that rolls over 3 ounces, I might be in trouble. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
We're on the amendment. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be brief on this, but I think the good senator from the Ivory Towers makes a good case for maybe it should be less. If these people are going to chase the concentration down, I think he made a compelling argument that maybe a half an ounce is the appropriate. But here's the thing. You guys, we deal with these bills every year. The law always chases the manufacturer. About every 2 years, the DCI comes to the judiciary and they bring a bill and they want to add a whole new list of chemicals because the manufacturers are out there creating new derivatives of these drugs by adding a single molecule. So the point being that I'm trying to get to here, the law will always chase the manufacturer of these drugs, and that's not going to change. But we have to have something, and I'd encourage you to pass this out. And I'm sure the good senator from the Ivory Towers now sees the wisdom of his argument. We'll be bringing a second reading amendment to reduce that amount. Thank you.
So we're back. We're on the amendment. Let's take care of the amendment. Senator Christensen, I'll let you have the last shot on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the amendment, you know, and I ask that the body not be confused by the hazy arguments from the chemistry-oriented senator from the ivory tower.
Let's keep it good around here.
And I would very much appreciate, Mr. Chairman, the point that the high-flying senator from the Northeast brought up about the cookie. Now, on a much more serious note, when we talk about that cookie, it was only a couple years ago when one of our students from the Northwest of Wyoming, one of our college students, instead of eating one portion of a cookie, I think it was four portions of a cookie, resulted in complete disorientation. It was told us in committee, hollering, screaming, waving his arms, and ran off the fourth floor balcony and died. We make light of this and we talk about the old days, but this is very serious. You heard us talk, previous testimony about we're always chasing science and formulas and recipes. Well, yes, we are. Well, today, remember what I said, 3 doses, 1 gummy bear. This is not your father's product. We heard an example about a bottle of oil and a sprig of something that may or may not contain anything. Officer discretion, prosecutor's discretion, and the judiciary discretion. There are a number of checks put in there to make sure the citizens of Wyoming are not mowed over in this thing. Please take this amendment very seriously and encourage your positive vote.
Thank you, Senator Christensen. The question is on Senate Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 96. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The ayes have it. The amendment is passed. Back on the bill. I see that there is a Committee of the Whole amendment. Let's have it read in, and then we'll go to Senator Meyer.
Senate File 96, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. Delete, then page 1, line 4.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I read Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. I think it's been some great debate. This amendment has a couple of things in there. After the discussion about prosecutorial discretion, we may have a deficiency in the first two paragraphs, 5 and 6. So I draw that to the attention of folks that may want to divide this amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Meyer, I heard you say you bring the amendment. Would you say move the amendment?
Oh, I thought I said I moved the amendment.
I'm not sure I heard that.
Okay, I apologize, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move committee the whole amendment to Senate File 96 and ask for your favorable consideration. So briefly, I'll go over 5 and 6. Essentially, this says to possess and with the intent to manufacture or deliver means is in possession of greater than 3 ounces and any controlled substance. In the bottom of it says possession of greater than 3 grams as specified in the paragraphs. It's 5 years and 5,000. That's the same felony that's in the bill at the current state. But I think the more important part of the bill, Mr. Chairman, is on the second page, and I'll go through paragraph 6 on the second page in some detail. essentially, you have, and there's a couple of things here that after talking to some of the law enforcement people here, and it has to do, again, with judicial discretion, that would need some fine-tuning. In the, we basically have 3 different phases of penalties here, Mr. Chairman. For the first time that you violate the statute, you get no more than 4 weekends. It was brought to my attention that a lot of people are shift workers. And so weekends probably isn't the correct way to say this. If you're going to leave it to that, you would have, 8 days during any 1 month during a time period in which the individual was not working, and not more than $300 in fine. Not more than $300 is essentially the same way that we're doing now. It was told to me that that most municipal judges will do $75 in a misdemeanor. So it's in concert with the current procedures that the courts are doing at this time, Mr. Chairman. So what I'm trying to do this one here, if somebody gets caught with this, I don't want them to lose their job. I want them to have a fine, but I want them to still be able to be employed and not cause that much of a disruption in their life, but to slap their hands pretty good and to make sure that say that this is something we don't want you to do in Wyoming and we don't tolerate it. On the second conviction, Mr. Chairman, within 3 years from the date of the first conviction, it's punishable by imprisonment of not more than 30 days in county jail and a fine of not more than $1,000. So we're stepping up the fines to give that judicial discretion that if you have a judge that really wants to tell this guy that, hey, we're gonna take some money out of your pocket, he can do that. And I think the judge will have that discretion to look at the defendant and look at his financial capacity and make the appropriate consideration there. Then, Mr. Chairman, on a third or subsequent conviction within 3 years from the date of conviction is punishable for imprisonment of not more than 120 days in county jail, or more than a fine of $3,000. So, again, we raise that fine up substantially, or both. In addition, in lieu of the punishment that the judge may impose under this paragraph, and I think this is extremely important, Mr. Chairman, the judge may require substance abuse treatment not to exceed the maximum number of days the defendant may be imprisoned under this paragraph. Then we go down and transport in the same language that was in the other amendment, that it's the 3 ounces and the 3 grams. So, Mr. Chairman, I think this is an attempt to make sure that there is, that the crime does fit the punishment, essentially the three strikes and you're out provision that we have in most statutes doesn't apply in this instance, but we do have the felony on the other side. And I think that's important because if you're a habitual user, more likely than not, you're going to have more than 3 ounces and 3 grams, and then you could be subject to a felony under the provisions on the front of the page as far as manufacture or intent to deliver. And so if somebody is a habitual user, more likely than not, they're going to have a lot more than 3 ounces or 3 grams or whatever we decide on at a subsequent date if we go to another standard. But, Mr. Chairman, I think that this gets to the problem that we have down south of these things coming up. Make sure that there's some heavy fines involved. It provides for treatment to try to move these people and keep them in our society because for the most part, they're very productive members of our society. And frankly, we don't have the jail space or the prison space to make everybody a felon. And so we let them make a few mistakes, but if they're habitual, there's a good chance that they are going to be a felon, Mr. Chairman. And I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. Discussion on the amendment? Discussion on the amendment. Seeing none, Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, appreciate the work that the good senator's gone to work through this conversation about penalties and consequences and opportunities and everything we all hold in a high priority. But as we started out with, there are some issues with the first part of the amendment. There were some questions in language on the second part. I'd suggest maybe we either withdraw or vote this down and look at refining it and coming back with a more accurate and condensed version for a second reading amendment.
Thank you, Senator Christensen. Senator Meyer?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. If the good chairman would like to work with me on that and anybody else to work and refine this, Mr. Chairman, I think it would be time well spent. We've got a lot of bills up there. And so at this point in time, Mr. Chairman, I will withdraw and ask for any help for anybody that's interested in refining these.
Seeing no objection, the amendment is withdrawn. Back on the file? Question on the file? The The question is in regards to when the Committee of the Whole, that Senator Christensen's motion, that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 96. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 96 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have privilege of the floor.
You may.
Members of the Senate, we just took an hour and 20 minutes to do two bills. There's 35 bills up there. That puts us here till 5:30 in the morning. I'm not going to be here at 5:30 in the morning, members of the Senate. What I want to tell you is it looks like we're going to have a, we'll have pizzas brought in this evening, take a short break, because I want to get through these bills. There's some important bills up there. So it's important that we have the debate, and I'm not going to suggest that anyone not get up and say what they want to say, but you know, we are the Senate, and we understand what's going on. I think we can have our comments be more succinct, and if you can shorten them up, it would be appreciated by people that have those bills up there. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I move that we beg leave to rise and sit again at 1:30.
Thank you. You've heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole is adjourned to 1:30. Mr. President, come here.
Announcements. Senator Geis.
Mr. President, Committee Number 5, Agriculture and Public Land and Water Resources will meet tomorrow morning.
Senator, your mic's on the other side of your desk.
Mr. President, is that better?
That's much better.
Joint Ag Committee, Public Land and Water Resources will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. All senators are invited to come. We're going to hear the U.S. Forest Service and Wyoming State Forest Division in L-51, wherever that's at.
Senator Ross.
Yeah.
It's in the building. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet as soon as we can grab something quickly. You might even want to take it with you to the Senate 18. For two re-referrals, the first one being Senate File 94, Payment for Educational Services, and then we'll take up Senate File 72, 70 miles per hour speed limit state highways.
Other messages, announcements? There being none. Oh, Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 7, Corporations, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in Jonah Room S18. We're going to take up Senate File 54. Appropriations to Local Governments Codification, 8 a.m.
Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to report that Jan Poppy back here is from NCSL. She's an Evanston native and really smart. And if you need anything from NCSL, she's here to help you.
We actually have an announcement for you.
Oh. Sorry.
No, that's fine while she's here. So here's the announcement. Members of Senate, that is Julie Poppy, Wyoming's liaison from the National Conference of State Legislatures, will be here today to visit with legislators about the NCSL services. The Wyoming legislature pays dues to belong to the NCSL, and the organization has a wealth of resources to help you with your legislative work. Ms. Poppy will be in the Senate lobby this afternoon. If you have any questions about NCSL services or requests for information, Julie will be happy to meet with and visit you in the lobby. And thank you for being here. If everybody give her a warm welcome. All right, you've heard the motion. Any further announcements? There being none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion has been adopted. The Senate shall stand in recess until 1:30 p.m.